Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, I'm back. Glad you're there. Sorry about the hooky yesterday. It was rather unavoidable. But you know what? We will try to cram two shows into the narrow space of one this evening and make up for lost time. I guess the thing that is occupying my mind as I watch the coverage of Haiti is that eternal question for me of what is news? And understanding as we do that the old maxim of if it bleeds, it leads has never been more true than it is today in the world of compacted, compressed, corporatized infotainment as journalism for-profit media. You know, that's almost a German compound noun if you think about it, but you know what I'm talking about. I can't help wondering how much of this stuff is actually news and how much is masturbation, to be quite honest. It is necessary that we find out the scope and breadth of what has happened so that the right thing may be done in the face of a disaster such as that which is Haiti, or that which is Katrina, or that which is the tsunami in the south and in Southeast Asia. You have to know what's gone wrong in order to try to start to make it right. But just by way of inquiry, I ask you, what is the news value of a story whose headline is, for instance, Rescue Could Cost Girl Her Leg? Now, don't think that I'm some sort of unsympathetic jerk. I am not. Stories like that are heartrending. But the question is, what is the news value? I suppose it's entirely likely that there is an entire subsection of the American consciousness that was barely aware that Haiti even existed. No getting around that. Well, now maybe they do. America, with its attention span being what it is, the best way to make Americans aware that Haiti exists would be to host either a reality show or a talent competition there. You know, American Idol, Haiti edition, Dancing with the Haitians, The Great Race, Caribbean Poverty Style. I think you see my point. Using hand tools, Haitians dig selves out is another headline I'm looking at right now. Another headline says, absolutely catastrophic situation looms in Haiti. I have no doubt of the truth of that headline. But let me take it a step further. An absolutely catastrophic situation has been looming in Haiti. It has been living in Haiti. It has been in full blossom in Haiti. Virtually since the inception of that poor, poor, poor country. And I'm rather at a loss, and I'm trying to move a little bit slowly here because I don't want to get what I'm trying to say wrong. But it shames me as an American when we only pay attention to other portions of, you know, my God, just as President Obama said, we are separated by merely a few hundred miles of water. But consider the inequities. We have something with regard to Cuban refugees called the dry foot rule. The dry foot rule says that if you are Cuban and you make it to the United States and you get one dry foot on American soil without being caught by the Coast Guard or yada, 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 by God, you get to stay in America. Because you know them Cubans, that Cuban government with all their socialized, universal, single-payer health care and their higher literacy rate than America and their lower infant mortality rate and their lower maternal postpartum mortality rate. That's communism, and they live under a terrible, terrible dictatorship. And so if a Cuban can just get away from that hell in the Caribbean of lowered infant mortality rates and lowered postpartum maternal death rates and higher literacy rates. If a Cuban can just get one dry little itsy-bitsy toe on American free soil, we'll say, come on in and live here and experience the joys and the hallelujah glory of Merca. Sit right down. Turn on your TV set, learn you some English, and get yourself mesmerized right into our culture of life. Maybe that sounds a little crappy on my part, but tell me which part of what I've just said is not true. Come on here to America, boy! You can work yourself into an early grave chasing the capitalist dream. Ain't gonna be no health care for you here, boy, like there was in that Cuber, but at least you'll die not being a commie. Isn't that about the size of it? Have I missed much? On the other hand, if you are Haitian, it doesn't matter if you get the entirety of dry you onto American soil. The American government will do everything in its power to ship your black ass home. Because after all, the only thing you were fleeing was a century of bad, corrupt government, dictatorial policies. No health care, no retirement, vast infant mortality, vast maternal postpartum death, literacy rates so low they are through the floor, disease that runs rampant in the streets, half an island that has been absolutely denuded of every natural resource that it has, but dang it, it ain't communist. And since it ain't communist, we ain't going to give no Haitian no dry foot. Now, it is interesting that there has been a declaration that all current and active deportations from Haiti have been suspended by the Obama administration, which I would have to say, despite the fact that I'm sure there's out there some forlorn teabagger or miserable Minuteman bemoaning the fact that we ain't sending them illegals back yet. It's a humane gesture. It is, however, precisely that, a gesture. It is not a policy. The foreign policy of the United States with regard to Haiti has been a misery
almost from the instant that nation, to the extent it was born, was born. I take you now to your RDA of irony, as penned by the internet's most brilliant satirist and quite serious historianado, Eugene Finneran. I think I just invented a new word. A historianado. A history aficionado. Ooh, two languages. Two words. One concept. Eugene took as his point of departure today the loathsome, and we must get to this at some point in time, although I'm hard-pressed to figure out what exactly to say about the fact that, well, let me just say this. If you were listening to Tuesday night's program, you heard Juanita. You heard Juanita predict that Pat Robertson would claim that Haiti's problems stem from a pact with the devil. How many other radio shows were there out there that had that prediction on Tuesday? Here's a hint. None. Just this show, just this network. Because we have that broad range of experience and diversity that makes everything that goes on here at the Horn so very doggone special. And so when I saw that Pat Robertson had in fact claimed that Haiti has been cursed because of a pact with the devil, when I saw that yesterday evening, I thought, well, dang, didn't Juanita tell us all about that on Tuesday before Pat even done it? Yeah, she did. And it was another one of those moments where I'm just so glad to be a part of this process. But anyway, the Internet's most brilliant satirist and historianado, Eugene Finneran, wrote today under a posting called Why the Haitians Don't Speak Spanish. Televangelist Pat Robertson said Haiti has been cursed because of what he called a pact with the devil in its history. His spokesman said the comments were based on voodoo rituals carried out before a slave rebellion against French colonists in 1791. And the import of this is to give you some sense, some deeper sense, of just where Haiti comes from and where it's been going all this time. Eugene notes, of course, it seems probable that any pact with the devil would be in French. Nonetheless, Reverend Robertson, not a French speaker, may have overestimated the number of Haitian slaves who were graduates of the Sorbonne. At Robertson's Regent University, the French philosophy curriculum consists of a cassette of Gigi. Do I have to queue up, thank heaven, for little girls? Ooh. So how did the French end up in Haiti? Answering his own question, Eugene says, the Spanish were the first Europeans to introduce themselves to the island. If the natives did not fully appreciate the free market employment benefits of slavery, they did have the popular alternative of dying from European diseases. While the Spanish traditionally used rape to replenish the labor force, on the newly christened Hispaniola, the Castilian recycling could not keep pace with the epidemics. With the native population near extinction, the Spanish began importing Africans for all those annoying little tasks around the house and the plantation. So that explains the Dominican Republic. What about Haiti? Hispaniola was nominally Spanish, but in the 17th century, French pirates seized the western end of the island. Remember Basil Rathbone's accent in Captain Blood? Another French pirate of the time, Louis XIV, wanted to seize Belgium and Alsace. His efforts triggered a war with Austria, Spain, and Great Britain. Spain owned Belgium, Austria controlled Alsace, and Britain's William III just liked fighting France. The War of the Grand Alliance, the French certainly had a more profane term for it, lasted from 1689 to 1697. The French actually were doing quite well. They now had most of Alsace and had even seized Catalonia from Spain. Barcelona could have been part of the French Riviera. But Louis already was anticipating the next war for the Spanish succession, so he was eager to settle this conflict and offered generous terms to Spain. The French returned Catalonia, and as a token of appreciation, Spain formally ceded western Hispaniola to France. Jesus, isn't it amazing to see the twisted machinations that result in such manifest human misery centuries down the line. Astonishing. Saint-Domingue, as the French named it, proved a very profitable colony. Its rich soil and slave cheap labor produced sugar, coffee, and cacao. The Salon of Paris depended upon it. According to a census taken in 1789, Saint-Domingue had a population of 32,000 Frenchmen and 500,000 slaves. Of course, that census was not the most memorable event of 1789. Far from it. In fact, those 500,000 slaves assumed that the revolution entitled them to be free, too. Oh, silly slaves, silly, silly slaves. In 1791, they began an insurrection for their emancipation. Pat Robertson would say that the French Revolution was caused by the devil. France, soon at war with all of Europe, was in no position to crush a rebellion in a distant colony. Furthermore, a number of the French revolutionaries, including those vile Jacobins, actually agreed with the idea of abolishing slavery. If only a triumph in principle, in 1794, the laborers of Saint-Domingue were promoted from slaves to peasants. However grateful, they did not feel exactly French and soon were agitating for self-government and political independence. In 1801, François Dominique Toussaint Louverture, don't hold me responsible for that, and Eugene, you ought to know better than to hang words like that in front of me. An educated former slave and leader of the insurrection issued a proclamation of independence for Saint-Domingue. Unfortunately, the French government was no longer controlled by devout liberals. Napoleon Bonaparte's response was to send a military expedition of 20,000 men to maintain French control. Toussaint was captured and sent as a prisoner to France, where the northern climate quickly killed him. But the island's climate would have its revenge. Most of the French expeditionary force died of yellow fever within a year of their arrival. The meager few who survived the disease then were overwhelmed by the rebel forces. Accepting the inevitable, in 1804, France granted independence to a land that the natives called Haiti. There was another consequence to the success of the Haitian rebellion. By 1803, Napoleon realized that the colony was lost. If France could not hold Saint-Domingue against poorly armed peasants, how could it possibly hold New Orleans and Louisiana against the encroachments of that new American Republic? Napoleon decided to make a deal as quickly as possible. Our histories, though we seldom note it, are very much intermingled. The U.S. and Haiti. And I think if, as I said before, Porfirio Diaz's words about Mexico were true, they are 1,000 times more true for Haiti. Poor Haiti. So far from God. So close to the United States. Because every time we thought that they were getting a little uppity, we've not hesitated to send the Marines into Haiti. In fact, it was a tour in Haiti that helped convince General Smedley Butler, United States Marine Corps, that he had just spent his life not in the service of the United States of America, but as a corporate enforcer thug for American business interests. You see, because he was known to be a little bit, shall we say, forthright and outspoken, General Butler didn't get to go and play in the great European meat grinder that was otherwise known as the War to End All Wars, the First World War, or the War to Make the World Safe for Democracy. Instead, he put down slave uprisings that threatened American corporate interests in Haiti. And so you have it in a nutshell. We have abused Haiti. We have spit on Haiti. We treat Haitians as if they are second-class citizens of the Western Hemisphere. But now we're going to take what is left of our overstretched, overthin, overworked American military and try to do some good there until we can get Haiti perhaps to the point where it doesn't look so awful in the press. That's about as much as we've ever done for Haiti. And then there's an issue to be raised, namely, and I think this is a serious both military and philosophical discussion that I would be fascinated to have. The question of sending the military, otherwise known as trained killers and blowers up of things, sending the military to do humanitarian work. The fact of the matter is, in reading all of the surrounding information about relief efforts and so forth in Haiti, I am reminded of Dennis Kucinich's Department of Peace. I am reminded of our friend Dwayne's proposal for the American World Service Corps. What if we had a corps in this country whose only goal was to do the opposite of war? Specifically trained, and yes, some of it would be in keeping order. But you know what? Military policing is not the same as military action. What if we had an entire dedicated, well-trained corps of people in this country who could respond at a moment's notice in massive fashion to massive disasters the world over, such that the United States became the benchmark standard for responding to those times, those moments, and those places where the earth breaches and hell yawns out on some poor, unsuspecting, and God knows undeserving, despite what Pat Robertson says, people. We might then begin to fulfill both our potential and our mission in this world. It's worth thinking about, isn't it? At least I hope it is. This email rolling in from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, do you think that any of your neocon, Randian, libertarian knuckleheads will notice that Haiti is the unregulated paradise they all dream of? Haiti, Somalia, Iraq, the real free market at work, coming to America soon. Ain't that the truth? But you can't get that out of the likes of, an addled junkie like Limbaugh, or a guy with half his brain pickled behind his back like the so-called recovering alcoholic Glenn Beck. You can't get that out of them. Because theirs is not to question why. Theirs is but to do and watch you die. It is. It is an anarcho-Randian paradise. Everything that human greed could strip from the western end of Hispaniola has, by God, been stripped. It is capitalism on steroids. No good government, a weak government, a government so weak that any strong man with a gun and a cadre of thugs can take it over. Wow, that just sounds like a Grover Norquist wet dream, doesn't it? That's only because it is. This from our buddy William. What I can't get my head around, and trust me, I've dug deep into my pockets of common sense, morality, and the value of human life, how can it be that we as Americans are willing to help Haiti, and by all means we absolutely should, people are dying due to a natural disaster, yet at the same time, and on the other hand, as Americans, we also create mass death, bombing the people of Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan, perhaps even Yemen, thereby creating unnatural disasters. I added that last part. They are also, for the most part, just civilians, many of whom are gone and out. Grand government continues to support this horror. Are gone, and our grand government continues to support this horror. It's hypocrisy because, for the life of me, I cannot see the difference. Add to this Katrina and mountain removal right here in the U.S. of A. And that's the question of using an overstretched military. Do you realize that if the United States military actually had to defend something on American soil right now, we might as well have the surrender papers ready? Because George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, and then extending into the Obama administration, we have almost utterly destroyed America's ability to defend itself. Not to wage war, because we're waging lots of war, although it's probably a lot of that war waging has been a lot less than ept. But to defend ourselves, to do that for which the framers of the Constitution envisioned any sort of military. Yeah, I know. It's 26 past the hour. Let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Well, okie dokie. We'll try somebody else then. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how are you?
Well, we'll talk about that part of it later. Let's see. My question is isn't it amazing how, wonder if the news media will go back and cover all that stuff from, what was it, 2004? When we went down and helped President Aristide leave. Just because those guns were pointed at him, that didn't have anything to do with it. But still, you know, we loaded him onto a plane and said, you're getting out of here. Because right. We're putting in our puppets.
Yeah, how's that puppet doing with the disaster?
Well, I tell you what, the most chilling, not chilling, I should say, but the most thing was when they showed the picture of the way the palace used to look and the way it looks now, the before and after. They showed it from sometime in the past, some pretty day, and then they showed it with all three of the sections of it collapsed. Like, well, that's that. That's pretty much over.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, but what you were talking about a minute ago is almost like what we need is almost like an international version of FEMA.
Well,
FEMA used to be, I should say.
Yeah, to constitute Dennis Kucinich's Department of Peace, mm-hmm. and then to staff it with the folks that. Within that plan that our good friend Dwayne Hunn envisioned, the American World Service Corps.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's simply perfect.
Well, it's sort of like the way, what was it used to be called, the during World War, during the FDR years, the
WPA, CCC.
WPA. Sort of like something like that. You know, go to the places where people can't help themselves and help them a little bit. Get them standing on their feet so they can do some of it themselves. You know, it's the old fisherman thing, you know. You know, give a man a fish, he'll eat. Teach him the fish, he can eat forever.
Yeah.
Speak. You know what I mean? But, you know, that's like you say, it's something like what Kucinich says with the Department of Peace. I don't know if you'd have to run it through UN or whatever, but that's what you need, almost like that. And like, sort of like Doctors Without Borders. Somebody just needs to bring sort of all those groups kind of together. You know what I mean? To make it into that.
Yeah.
Be something great to do, but that won't
and,
happen.
And, you know, non-corporatized.
Oh, but that's the problem. If you tried it, the corporatist would say, oh, you're trying to go around the government. It's like the thing with...
Yeah, we got a right to wet our beaks.
It's like the thing with Overman and them, you know, where they were running those free clinics. You know, some of the people around were just absolutely just up in arms over that. How dare you come here and give people care? You know, it's like the one Stan Brock, you know, runs the health thing. It's stationed here. It's centered here. You know, he went out to L.A. one time a few months ago and did it. Held one of the free clinics. And people were just up in arms. How dare you come here and do this? It's like, well, people needed it. You all weren't doing it. Somebody had to do it. Set myself on the sidelines. We went ahead and helped people. And the people we helped, they were happy to see us. So I don't know. But, you know, it's one of those things. But one thing you were talking about a minute ago, Harry Reid should send a thank you note to Robertson and Limbaugh.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, that just totally blew any.
Well, you know,
smashing on Reid.
Oh, without a doubt, and it's another instance of that Jerry Clowerism. Somebody getting some relief.
Yeah.
That we were talking about the other night, and Harry Reid is the beneficiary of significant relief.
Well,
I've got a Limbaugh follow-up clip from today.
Oh dear.
That it, I don't know.
That cut below his nose still ain't healed up, has it? Well.
No, and this time I would suggest that the women of the nation might. You know, he was wondering a while back why his approval ratings with women was like, 29% or something. Well, I suspect it's on its way down to the teens at this point.
You have another info babe alert or something?
No, it's even worse than that. I'm not going to give it away. I want to play the audio and just let him do it himself.
Let me hit a couple of quick political things. And
sure.
Because, like I say, the thing with Haiti, like you say, it's something that's been under our noses. You know, it's right at our feet and we can't see it. You know what I mean? But, all right, let's get on to some other stuff. Have you noticed, though, how last week, the conservatives went just absolutely, I won't use the word, but nuts is a better word, when somebody suggested Ed Schultz should become a Senate candidate? Oh, my God, we have to get him off the air if he's even thinking about it. Then, well, what does Fox Noise do? Well, shoot, we got to put another candidate on our shows. We already had Mike Huckabee, so now we're going to stick on Caribou Barbie.
And I think Caribou Barbie is there precisely because of radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee.
But that's what I mean. You're sitting there going, you know, you all are sitting. They're sitting there complaining about Ed Schultz. But, oh, by the way, you don't want to talk about Mr. Huckabee or Caribou Barbie. And it's like, you know, and Ed ain't even a politician. They are. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're both politicians. You know, it's like the old thing with Pat Buchanan. You know, he's a politician for 1 year, and the next 3 years he's a commentator. It's sort of a work release program, apparently. But, what was the other one? Oh, this new Game Change book. And you noticed how anywhere in this book, apparently there aren't too many quotes?
No, they're not. They're all paraphrases, aren't they?
And by the way, we're going to paraphrase but Bill Clinton with a paraphrase, the only other person that knows about it is dead and in a box. So he can't say one way or the other. And nobody we know has come forward to say, Teddy said, yeah, that happened. But the only person, you know, the only person to refute that.
But you know what? There's a way to, and I'm not defending, and I'm not even asserting that it's true, but let's get this clear. There is a way in which that gets said to somebody, if it's said to somebody like Ted Kennedy, there's a way in which that gets said, Luke, where it's not a slur, but a compliment and an observation of the distance traveled in this country.
Well, I can't, for some reason, my company, I'm at work, and our email thing has got a security lock on part of something, so I cannot send it to you, but I need to go read the Gene Lyons column for this week. You know, where he's sitting there going, don't tell me this, the Bill Clinton, essentially the first black president we ever had, would say something like this. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, I understand that him and Hillary weren't in a happy mood, but it said you're going to have to work hard to convince me that Bill turned that 180 degrees.
Well, see, there's
that kind of statement.
The Republican Party is still at war with Bill Clinton.
Oh, 10 years after Bill Clinton's in the ground, they'll still be at war with Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
You know, they'll bring in somebody to hold a seance so they can fight with him. I mean, Lordy, please. But But one thing about Caribou Barbie being on faux noise, that's going to give you material for the next 2 or 3 years.
It's like not having to work.
I know, that's what I mean. It's one of those things. Just wait around until she says something, and there it is. You know, it's like Newt. You know, we just wait for Newt to eventually. You know, Newt will talk to the point where he'll start shooting off toes. You know, Newt's one of the people that, you know, somebody says, you go this far. No, Newt's got to go that extra couple steps just because he's Newt. And Palin's the same way. You know, somebody will say something, and she'll try to correct herself, and that'll even be more fun. Let's see. You have,
and there are a million of them out there, of course, but you have seen this latest dandy. Godzilla from Wasilla was asked, who's your favorite founding father?
Oh, yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
Haven't we heard that before? Governor Palin, which newspapers do you... All of them.
I mean, at least say John Adams. At least he was the conservative of the group. I mean, don't you know that much? I mean, God, you know. Oh, you know, it's one of those things, like you say, it's one of those things that... You sometimes are just supposed to have the EEG hooked up to see if there is any brainwave activity.
Well, she did have to backtrack a little bit, and she finally landed on George Washington because he didn't want to be a king. He returned power to the people. Then he went back to Mount Vernon, don't you know? He went back to his farm, you betcha. Never mind, he went back to his slaves, but, yeah, well, yeah.
I know. One thing I did want to say, a couple things quickly, I'm sorry. I saw Howie finally mention the thing about the Republicans and their 9/11 amnesia.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he mentioned it Sunday on his show, but amazingly enough, he mentioned CBS and he mentioned ABC, but somehow John King's name just couldn't come across his lips. Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's see, what was the other one? And this is just totally off subject. I'm sorry about this. Have we seen anybody do anything worse than this thing with NBC? I mean, you just got to wonder when the stockholders are going to say, fire some people up in that tower.
Oh, you mean the inanity over Leno versus Conan?
Leno versus Conan, and Dave sitting on the side eating popcorn, just cheering himself on.
Bring me another bucket. Extra butter this time. I'm ready for the next bypass.
I mean, you know, him and Kimmel Craig Ferguson, they're just sitting over just having a party, you know, every night. It's like something new. And you're just sitting there going, you know, with this thing.
Well, the thing is, Leno's not funny.
I know.
Conan's not very funny either.
I know. It's one of those things. It's like, guys, neither one of them really does well. I mean, I'll be honest, I've always been a Letterman fan. I mean, because
well, the guy that Johnny was a Letterman fan, but
I mean, that's who Johnny wanted. I mean, you know, but Johnny wouldn't pick favorites. You know, he didn't want to do that, but apparently. But that's who everybody who's said anything. So that's who he wanted.
Well, he made it clear it's inept and it's to be expected because you know look at what passes for humor for Conan O'Brien and Jay Leno, and nobody has documented this better than Bart Kopp.
Oh.
I mean, he's had, it's been like a quote of the day from one of those two, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Conan, you know, quote, and then underneath it, Conan killing NBC.
It's one of those things, every time you're, it's like, say you're just watching, just sitting there, you're just laughing your heads off. But, where was the other one here? I was looking for something else while I was talking, I apologize. I was trying to see when our friend Mr. Barr's coming back. He should be coming back anytime real, real soon. There's his face. Sorry about that. Pulling it up. I'm just there. February 19th. Oh, shoot. Come on, son.
Back that's going to be a while.
I'm going to say, shoot. It'll all be over.
But that's the nice thing about working for HBO. You really don't have to work that much.
True enough. That's the way that goes.
And you know what? The guy does a live show.
Oh,
once,
yeah.
Hey, you know, good work. Nice. It's a nice schedule if you can get it. Hey, Luke, I've got them stacked up to the walls here. I really appreciate it.
One thing. I'll tell you what I told a friend of mine when he called the other night. I said, you get the pitchforks, I got the torches, let's go over to the UT.
Yep. Or
we'll talk another night on that. We'll go through that.
Yeah, I think so. That deserves some going over. Maybe we'll do a sports night.
All right, bud.
Later, Luke.
See ya.
Bye now. And onward we go. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That's you.
Hey, Bob, it's Renee Louise.
Hey, Renee Louise.
First of all, I have to say, I'm sorry, I hung up on you before. I went to pick up the phone and I hit the button, wrong button.
Oopsie.
That was me, I'm sorry. I apologize.
You are forgiven.
Am I? I was hoping you were going to say that. I'm very sorry. First of all, thank you for your, everybody, what you had to say on Haiti, what the emails that came in, Juanita and Jean. I couldn't agree with all of it anymore, and thank you for expressing it as beautifully as you all did. One of the things I wanted to call about, too, though, before I forget, I was going through the archives, and I heard Kate talking about going back to with Mississippi, right?
Yes.
And she was talking about recording. She wanted to do recordings for the people there.
Right.
And I wanted to pass on some information that might help her. There's a group called StoryCorps, StoryCorps.
Okay.
They do what she's talking about throughout the nation. And she might be able to, they have places set up throughout the nation where people can go, and there's some just beautiful moments that I've heard where people can talk about whatever they want together. And they're recording the history. There's one with this husband and wife where they were talking about her illness and him being there. It was just beautiful. And they even went through another elderly couple's life together, even up to the time where he was, his last moments before he was passing. So it might be something that she might want to check into, that she might be able to find more information on that could help her with what she's accomplished there, which I think is a wonderful effort. I admire her greatly for doing that, besides everything else that she does. I can even send the link to their site. I can send it to you.
Send it to me, and I'll forward it on.
Yeah, I'll do that. And other thing I wanted to talk to you about was your beautiful, wonderful interviews with the science peer review on mountaintop removal,
mm-hmm.
and then Blair Mountain. Thank you so much for doing both of those as well. Again, you were right on top of the interview with the scientists there, and kudos to you for that. I know Democracy Now! Did something. I had an interview with them after yours, and the questions that you put forth, and how on top of it you were. It was so exciting, your excitement, and I was joining it with you, but your excitement just ran right through me, and it's such wonderful information to have, and to be getting it out there as much as possible. And I know also that ILoveMountains.org sent out an email asking people to call in regarding to the White House. I get to the forum as often as I can to put things up, but I haven't gotten to put that up on the forum yet either. But I would kind of have quickly stressed to everybody who's listening and otherwise if we could go ahead and help ILoveMountains.org out too with their mission here to get people calling into the White House to keep this study in President Obama's face, and the fact that, among other things, that it's irrefutable evidence now, but also the fact is to put forth him his, what did he say about wanting to keep science? I can't remember. Do you know what I'm talking about? His pledge to keep science ahead in politics.
Yes, yes. Relying on science instead of, yes.
Right. I mean, if that's what they need, instead of just the basic.
Well, but the question is, how do you square the idea of letting science dictate policy with stuff like Hobet and the Spruce Number 1 permit?
Exactly. Now, I'm there with you. I'm just giving another one of the talking points that they put forth. And if that's what people need, if that's what he needs to validate it, which is ridiculous to me. I mean, you and I are on the same page as that. It's just the factor of even just blowing up our mountains, just that idiocy. I mean, how it leaves me speechless. It leaves me speechless that we have such arrogance in the way we walk this earth as a mass consciousness, not present company and those of us listening, I know are much more in tune to it all, but it just can get, it's just one of those things that, gets my bloomers in a wad, is that the expression?
A version of it, yes.
Yeah, okay. But I would, again, I'll put it up on the forum as well, but and I'm sure it's on their website, ilovemountains.org. They have the information there. They have a talking point for you there. But, you know, they're trying to keep this peer study out there and in people's face. And if we as individuals can do it, not alone, you know, just with who we're speaking to every day, but in to our public officials as well, our local officials as well as those in Washington, now we have a physical science review there to back us up as well. You know, whatever we need, we have the ammunition to do it. Let's go ahead and start keeping it out there, keeping it in front of them, and keep bombarding them with it. So it was that. And then, again, like what I touched on with Blair Mountain, I'm so glad you put that forth. It was wonderful to hear. And that's something about you, the way you put forth our history and your knowledge of it. I just want to acknowledge you for that. You do it in such a unique Bob way, and I cherish listening to you put the story forth, the true storytelling of it, and just the way it touches the chords in you. It's precious. And I have iTunes on this new computer that I found on the curb. Finally, I can get it. And I keep your episodes. I will not ever get rid of one of them because of especially those beautiful moments when you start talking about our history and whatnot and the way you can relate it. I just cherish it, and I'm sure others do too, but I wanted to acknowledge that as well. And I guess that's about it.
Well, you know, it's away, I'm not, no, that's okay, Renee Louise. I'm not, this is not some pathetic cry for help, but that kind of thing, for how we operate and how we manage to stay on the air, that is encouraging in ways that you don't know.
Well,
it's validating, frankly.
Bob, and this is why, and you know where I'm at, and I so wish I could.
Oh, I know. You don't even have to say.
Okay, all right. And I'm working on that, Bob.
Don't sweat it. Don't sweat it.
I know, but it's something in me that.
No, but what I was saying is more along the lines, Renee Louise, of, you know, not the financial pressures, but the fact that, you know, we're operating out here in a medium that is still deemed to be something less than professional, something less than real, you know, because we're not breaking up the program with a lot of hustles for bowling balls, Swedish mattresses, and patent herbal remedies and crap like that. That somehow we're less professional. But this is the future. This is reality. This is what it will sound like 10, 15, 20 years. This is what it will all be like.
And Bob?
10, 15, 20 years down the road. And I'll be, you know, I'll get to be some little footnote, you know. And Bob Kincaid died under a bridge drinking screw top wine. And yeah, and it'll be cool.
I got to stop you there, right there. I want to tell you something. What you're doing and these conversations that you allow us to have, this one-on-one, this is what is the problem in the world. This is what we are missing out on. This is what life is about. We do not take the time to look into each other's eyes and truly care. And that is what's why the world is where it is at. And that is what you do. No matter what it is that whoever calls in wants to talk about, no matter what it is, even if it is, no matter how divergent it is from whatever brilliance you've just brought forth, you sit there and you listen. Not only do you have this wonderful ability for putting forth the history, as I said, but the way that you listen and you can relate to anybody. This is.
Well, I'm human. I ought to be able to. I mean, I've got. Gosh.
But that's just it. So many of us put the blinders on, stick our heads in the ground, and are scared of each other. Okay? And we're also scared of people who are in need. Because what are they going to want from us? What am I going to have to do for them? You know, they don't want to feel that. We don't want to feel that. But you go to these places, and you also just allow us to talk and be people, be human. That's just it.
Well, if that doesn't happen here, Renee Louise, there's no reason for it to be here. I mean, I can't tell you. I had my doors blown off when I saw the Pat Robertson thing, and you know, the earthquake happened because they made a pact with the devil. When I saw that, and then I realized that Juanita had been on the show the night before saying that that is what he would say.
The minute I heard you read her email with that, because I caught that on the archives, I'm catching like bits and pieces here and there, and I'm like, Juanita's just nailed something, and I just like her insight on those type of things too, or just in general.
Well, you know,
and
for those,
it just rang in me, and sure enough.
Well, for all the right wing hissy fits that are getting thrown about that movie Avatar, you know, there's the, and I'm not giving anything away. The natives on that planet have like this little organic USB thing at the end of their ponytail that they hook up with the rest of the planet, and are thereby able to interact with the planet or the moon or whatever it is. That's, you know, that's not science fiction. That's not something that's 150 years in the future.
It's called our heart.
It's a metaphor for how it's supposed to flip and work.
Exactly. And that's what drives me. And this is where I put my work, because this is what I'm talking about. But that's another reason why I have to acknowledge you. You are, it's not that you are the future. It's not that you are, yes, the horn is everything. But the thing is, you are the now. You are what is so vitally needed in every moment, in every breath, and you're doing it. And I have to acknowledge that. And I know the others of us who are sitting here listening to you, that's why we listen to you. It's what we're all looking for. It's the inner peace that we're all searching for, that we try to fill up with the mass consciousness, again, I'm talking about, is trying to fill up with all this material crap. What we really want is what you offer here on the horn. And it's what I'm talking, what I just said about there is, you know, spending the time to look into each other's eyes or listen, like here, let our hearts touch each other. That's what life is about. And you do it in such a profound way, and the way you put it forth, you know, and the brilliance that you've done to put it forth through the horn like this. If you ever need a shot in the arm, Bob, call me. I'm going to give my phone number, all right? Because I'm telling you, I won't let you go down. You know, I won't let you feel down in a moment. If I can't do what I can't do monetarily for you, I can do, you know, I'll give you the other way. And for me, that has more value to it. But because just your being and all of you at the horn do for me. I mean, what you, Juanita, and Jean, and the emails just came in on Haiti, brings the way you guys just touched everything that was going through in my heart, you know? And it's like, yes. And it's like, I'm so glad you're here on this universe with me, guys, you know? And this is it. This is what, whether people are aware of it or not, this is what we're looking for, what we're trying to fill in all these other ways. This is it. Right there. What you're offering, Bob. This is it. And you're right. We don't need, what's it, Avatar, anything else. It's happening right now if we just open ourselves up to it.
Now, see, that's like, and I don't want to extend this too far, but, I gotta offer some admiration to the man for as much of an ass as he has been over the years. Don Imus got one right today. And, you know, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. And Don Imus just blasted Limbaugh today. But then he had these words for Pat Robertson. He said, you know, I'm not sure whether sometimes I'm ambivalent about whether I support the death penalty or not. I guess I do if I didn't have to do it. But in his case, I'd pull the switch on him myself. I mean, he should be put to sleep. And that's, you know, that's Imus on Pat Robertson. And I saw that, and the first time I saw that, I went, yeah, thank you. But then I sort of pulled back off of it, and I thought, no, wait. Because what ought to happen to Pat Robertson is he ought to be set on top of a pile of rubble. You know, this is a guy who says he drinks his own brand of energy shakes that are available for $49.95 on the website. And he's able to leg press 700 pounds because he drinks these energy shakes. Okay? He ought to be, those 700 pound pressing legs on that septuagenarian body ought to be plopped on a pile of rubble somewhere in Port-au-Prince. And he ought to have it explained to him that the bleeding Christ is under the rubble. Don't give him a shovel. Don't give him a pick. Explain to him that the bleeding Christ is under the rubble, and that the bleeding Christ has taken the form of a 5-year-old dark-skinned child breathing her last.
Mm-hmm.
and say, dig, you son of a bitch, dig. And let him dig forever. That is what should happen to Pat Robertson. Not punishment, but maybe just something that might open, that might cause to fall away those miles thick scales of hatred.
Yeah.
That have covered him up in since the day he was born. You know, this is a son of privilege, Renee Louise.
I know.
He was a senator's son. He dodged real conflict in Korea by becoming the chief liquor supply officer for a unit.
God.
You know, long before George Bush ever ran off to the Texas Air National Guard, Francis Marion Pat Robertson, or Marion Pat Robertson, his name's Marion, his daddy, the senator, said, well, I don't want my precious bumpkin going into no war. Put him in charge of the liquor bottles. And they did.
You know, it's just, I was listening to Mike Malloy the other night, too, and he had some of these people calling in with the religion and all. It's astounding to me the hold religion has on people. And then because of the insecurity, it's scary and it's dangerous. And the hold that these people can get these other people through their insecurities and their fears is just, it leaves me speechless. And again, it's scary and it's dangerous. And it breaks my heart because of this type of thing that occurs. It's just, everything, the hypocrisy, and that people can't see it, are so blind to it because of their own fears and their own insecurities. It's just mind-blowing to me, Bob. It's just mind-blowing to me.
Renee Louise, I've got an echoing of what you just said here. This just rolled in from David in Tennessee, and I think this will have some resonance with you. David says, so much of the internet seems to isolate us and take us away from knowing our neighbors. Mm-hmm. We game, or we watch the big screens, rather than go next door and meet the neighbor.
Yeah.
Well, the horn conversations let us meet new neighbors and have meaningful talk.
Yeah.
We're just becoming neighbors of a slightly different sort.
Yes, thank you, David. Yeah, see, that's what I mean. And that's just, it's like everything and everybody, whether before I've even met anybody or ever do, And the ground I've walked on, the ground I haven't walked upon yet, everything to me is connected to me, is a piece of me. And then when I come and I do meet you in whatever way, meet with you, I meet with the ground, I meet with David in Tennessee through his emails or whatnot, the support and the added value of my being that I get when I share something like that with you or with, you know, with that other being, it's just, that's gold and diamonds to me. And he's right. I reiterate it again, what you bring forth through the horn to all of us is the life, true life sustenance.
Thank you, Renee Louise. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, Bob, you do not have to say
that. No, I do. No, I do. Because it's not all me. You have encapsulated practically the entirety of the horn. And you have done it eloquently and sensitively and with great heart and compassion. And I appreciate it on behalf of everyone.
That is the greatest, right there, what you just said to me, is the greatest gift you could give to me. And this is what I'm talking about here again. What you and I are sharing right now, and actually what we're sharing with everyone who's listening, this, again, is my golden diamond. This is what keeps me strong in my solitariness. This is what keeps me, that hope burning within me so abidingly, so furiously, even when there are moments like Katie or when there are Pat Robertsons and that bad oak in this world. It's right here, what we're going through, what we're experiencing together right now. And the moments when I'm not talking to you and others are talking, that is what keeps that sustenance in me, that life, that flame of life just abiding and burning in me so deeply.
You know, I'm strongly tempted. I don't know. Someone may talk me out of it. I'm strongly tempted to take this conversation we have had, Renee Louise, and just cut it out of the overall recording and let it stand by itself on the website and just put it under the heading, Why Is There a Horn?
Oh, Bob,
Because this is beautiful. This is just beautiful. And now comes the non-beautiful part of it, Renee Louise. As a result of what you and others have already offered in the program, the lines that I do have available are all blinking, and I want to get to everybody.
Yes, I understand completely. There's a couple other things I wanted to talk to you about, but I'm going to find another moment too. And what you just gave to me about whether that comes to fruition or not means nothing, does not mean so much to me. The fact that you said that you and I had this sharing together, and that's how it hit you. That's what I love about you, Bob. You and Agnes, you just touch my heart in such a unique, indescribable way, and we've said thank you enough to each other. I just want you to know how much of a part of my being you are with me, and there's no word that can express that.
We will let that stand on its own. Renee,
yeah,
have a wonderful evening.
You too.
And we'll talk again soon.
Okay, good.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Love to everyone.
All right. Bye now.
Talk to you later.
Okay. That's Renee Louise calling from out Westerly Way, out California Way. When she can get into the chat room, you will know her as Thunderstone. And let's see. Let's keep things going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Wow.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I was just calling, of course, because I can't really deal with the Pat Robinson thing. It's just...
Well, for once, I think Imus just took care of things.
Yeah, no, that's surprising that... He came out with that.
There's got to be that. You know what that tells me, Sandra, from the very cynical world of business. That tells me that he has some pretty strong contract language about what he can say about just about anybody he damned well pleases. Because in that same speech, there's also an absolute lambasting of Rush Limbaugh. In the same rant, he said. He told Limbaugh, one would think that you could just wait a few days, Rush, until you know you can run your fat mouth about it then.
Oh, God, but the Rush thing is just, I like how he got in the light and dark black community. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's look, the guy manipulates imagery, the guy manipulates frames. And what he was trying to do there without overtly saying, hey, wait, everybody, we need to be focusing on Harry Reid. Don't let the light get off Harry Reid. Instead, he drops that in there, and that's a tickler. That's right-wing conserva creep tickle. That's a clue. That's code that he's not really talking about Barack Obama. He's talking about Harry Reid.
No, but, I mean, it's just amazing. I'm like, when will this guy... not be relevant? Because listening to him, he just sounds like a lunatic. It doesn't even make
Sandra. He gets worse. I'm not trying to jump in on your point or anything, but he gets worse. I got about 5 minutes of him here, and I don't want to waste your time running it when we should be talking. But let me simply, this is just so cheap. This is a big tease for, don't touch that dial. It gets worse. He got worse today. Because he took his race hatred and his hatred of anybody he deems liberal. He mixed those together, added 12, carried 5, and then brought in the misogyny.
Well, yeah, but his misogyny is, like, legendary. You know, I don't even know how he has any women listeners at all. But
you know how any time somebody who's Jewish criticizes Israel, they're called a self-hating Jew?
Yeah.
Well, whatever that 29 or 22 or 12% of women who admire and like Rush Limbaugh, I don't know, they may be drag queens.
Yeah, no, definitely some self-loathing going on if they are fans of that pig, you know, and no offense to pigs. I don't even know what else to call them. It's miserable. But the thing in Haiti, you know, you were talking about a neoliberal fantasy. I mean, if you look at that country, it is suffering from the Lewis syndrome. Do you know that economist, Arthur Lewis?
Better help me with this one.
He developed the two-sector theory that poor developed countries have been subjected to for decades. What it is that you most developed countries, most of the activity is in the traditional sector, which is agriculture, right? So you starve the agriculture sector to build up this manufacturing base, which is supposed to provide all the employment, blah, blah, blah. This man won a Nobel Prize, well-known economist. But lo and behold, you have to have the manufacturers reinvest the profits and savers, all those good things.
Yeah, you can't you can't just suck it all out.
Right, but it does get sucked out. That's what happens. So what you do, you destroy the traditional sector, which is where people can survive, and you create cities like we have in Port-au-Prince, you know, stacked upon stacked upon stacked of people working shitty jobs for no wages. You know the wages are lower than China in Haiti, right?
Right,
that
yeah.
That's by design. Okay?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that much I do know.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, you know,
Haiti is Haiti because Haiti has been made Haiti.
Right.
It's not that the western end of Hispaniola is just predisposed to misery.
Yeah, so that situation is horrific, and why you have the high numbers of deaths in the cities is just that, you know. It's a horrific situation, you know, and people say, oh, Haiti can't catch a break, but let's not be coy. This shit is by design on so many levels outside of Mother Nature. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just am sort of...
Well, I mean, but neither nation is exactly setting the world on fire, but just the comparison between the Dominican Republic and Haiti lets you know that it's not endemic to the island. The Dominican Republic still has forest lands. The Dominican Republic has taken active steps toward protecting their ecostructure and their infrastructure.
Well, no, and trust me, the idea, I mentioned this before, that Haiti used to be, you know, almost the largest sugar producer in the world, been reduced to an importer of sugar? I mean, please, you don't have to be an economist to say, maybe something's wrong with that, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and not just that. I mean, let's extend this just a little bit further, Sandra. And I've run the risk of coming off like a real ass here, so I apologize in advance. I'm not talking about people not stepping up to give to help in this process, because it's a manifestation of what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature when we do these kinds of things. But you know, what we're talking about right now in the larger scope of things with the so-called recovery from the earthquake is a matter of putting a Band-Aid on a sucking chest wound. Okay? It's not, and because if you were to rebuild every building that was collapsed by the earthquake and raise from the dead every person killed, you would come back to a situation so-called normal that is still in the negative numbers in the grand scheme of things.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a time when you need to reimpose the tariffs and develop the traditional. I mean, I don't mean to sound this way, but they need to reinvest in the traditional sector, the agriculture sector, so people can be self-sufficient. This neoliberal shit is BS. I almost want to yell. You know, I'm just so disturbed that all you're going to get is disaster capitalism and some bloodsuckers waiting to cash in on this misery.
And see, I've got a story here. I think Marty sent it along to me. I don't have a chance to check my email here, but it's from the Huffington Post. The author is Laura Bassett, and the headline reads: As wallets open for Haiti, credit card companies take a big cut. And with all these donations to all these relief agencies, where people will be hauling out their credit card and making the donations. Well, it's just like any other purchase to a credit card company, and they, of course, in turn, will skim right off the top of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of similar to the, is it, who's doing the food stamp stuff here?
I can't come up with it offhand, but yeah, it's the same principle.
Yeah, you know.
Now the thing is, at 3:13 p.m. this afternoon, American Express announced that processing fees for any donations that are made to 65 charities that it approves of between January 12th and the end of February will be rebated back to the charities. But again, you know, the inclination is to read that, Sandra, and say, oh, isn't that nice? Look, they're human. They've got a heart. No. See that last word at the bottom word in the bottom line, rebated. They're still gonna charge the fees on the front end, and then at some point in time they will credit it back.
Yeah, after they've skimmed off whatever interest they. I mean, it's just,
bingo.
It is. It's really quite. No, the whole thing is really disturbing. The mechanism that's involved in this, and just how beholden to this. Blood-sucking financial sector we are. I mean, and it's hideous that everything can now be reduced to this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look at this. It says from January 12th to the end of February. So that's roughly 28-plus days, or 28-plus 19 days, 47 days. And they're not going to do the rebates on March 1. So all that money's going to be sitting there, and we are talking at this point millions of dollars that will be donated.
Yeah, oh no,
and the interest on it and the fees charged on it are monumental, and they're going to have all of that sitting in their coffers, earning interest. They're not going to rebate the interest on it, Sandra.
Well, I mean, yeah, and even that you have to wonder because so many different organizations have different types of interest now. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Some earn no interest or negative, like us savers. You know that,
right?
You barely get shit if you save right now. Then you have
right because banks. It doesn't keep up with the rate of inflation.
Right. Then you have banks getting money from the Fed, almost being paid to borrow money and then selling it back to us. You see what I mean? It's nothing is as it seems.
And you know, I'm getting this in via a private message from the chat room. And American Express and the credit card companies will write it off on their taxes, so we'll pay the waived fees.
No, it is stunning, and it's sad that this is where our conversation has to go because we're just inundated by bloodsuckers. And then I got to turn around and listen to Obama because his ass is getting worried talking about some fee on banks. It's like, yeah, right, bud, you're just realizing what's going on. You know what I mean? I don't mean to be so cynical, but that's a bunch of BS, too, because it's like, no, you know, this ain't going to work. You have to do more than that.
And, you know, I heard, I guess, what the pull clip is from those remarks, and that is I suggest to the banks that they not employ hordes of lawyers or accountants to try to beat this, but simply to step up and do their part. And you know what? That may be on the top. By the time he's done, that may be on the top 10 list of his quotes. Just step up and be part of the American process, and do what's right for America.
Yeah, right. Well, good luck with that.
But you know what? They are gonna shoot. Those lawyers aren't on retainer for giggles.
Well, no, but it's just a joke, and he knows. Yeah, he knows exactly what he's talking about. But that isn't going to help because they will find a way out of it. We are captive, okay? they have given them banks so much power that anything Obama suggests in that realm, short of nationalizing, is not going to do a thing. They're just laughing, you know? Like they laughed yesterday at that commission. That was a joke, too. I don't know if you caught any of that.
Yeah, I did.
It was a joke. It's like that fool actually said, well, yeah, if we get into trouble, the bank probably will help us. Bingo. Goodbye, market capitalism. It does not exist. Lloyd Blankenfeld confirmed it for us, okay? You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
But I don't know how many, all two of us who watched it. You see what I'm saying? I couldn't believe it. I'm like,
all two of us who watched it?
I can't even believe that he said that. Because there it was, saying, I don't know how many fingers he had up when he said that, but it was like, yeah, F you, and I'm going back to the Hampton or wherever the hell they live, you know? Anyway, listen, I know you have other people, and there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but I'll just let you go because my head's going to explode.
Well, I tell you what, go and go and apply ice and pressure to your head and gather it all together, and we'll take another run at it.
Okay, well, listen, have a good show.
And hey, don't touch that dial because you may be back on the phone after the Limbaugh clip.
Okay, I'm going to listen to that.
This is
all
so
right.
Not going to do you any good.
Oh, boy, okay.
All right, see you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye. All two of us who watched it. I didn't know we were the only ones. Well, I mean, come on, there had to be at least a dozen because NPR talked about it in passing, for God's sakes. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Bob. I'm calling from Vermont. It's been a long time.
Oh, it has indeed.
John?
Yeah, John.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Hanging in there. It's been a cold winter. I got a couple of things. One of the things that's been bothering me about Haiti is that, you know, in the Caribbean, there's probably 100 or, at least a dozen cruise ships floating around. And people in luxury that could have just been turned into that harbor that would be a great hotel, not a hotel, but a hospital for these people in suffering. It's bothering me because, it seems that we can get news media and motion and cameras and all kinds of other things in there, but you know, it really took 2 days to get people in there, and I'm sure there are cruise ships that within maybe 25, 50 miles of that harbor that could have been just turned right in there and became a place for people to.
You would think.
You know, there's doctors, there's water, there's food. Some of these ships hold several thousand people. It should have been, a means to help.
And John, I hate what I suspect is the answer to that. We can't do that. We'll lose profits.
I'm sorry, Bob. I can't hear you.
I hate to think that I know what the answer to that is and why it hasn't happened. We can't do that. We'll lose profits.
Well, you know, during the war, they took over ships to transport troops. They turned the cruise ships into hospital ships. I mean, they wouldn't have to do anything to convert, but I mean, these ships are already there, you know. I think maybe there might be a few vacations that would be maybe disrupted, but, you know, it was just inhumanity and it's just not happening. Anyway, it's just one of the things that's bothered me. I'm watching it on TV and very upset about it. You know, these people suffering like this, and there's so many of them. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. I just, it was a comment that, everybody's talking about it.
And I mean, that infrastructure is out there.
It is. I mean, Barack Obama could just, I'm sure if he just called these ship captains and say, hey, Port of Friends is where you're going, and they would be there.
Well, that's, among other things, one of the things that I did catch today is that there was a real hitch in the relief process made up by virtue of the fact that they had there's no more aviation fuel, or wasn't at the time I was hearing, no more aviation fuel on the ground, so the planes that got in couldn't get out.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. That's why these ships are self-contained. They have everything on board, including doctors and nurses. Maybe not enough to be, but at least they could be floating operation centers. And I mean, we're talking a massive disaster here. And I'm just appalled that there doesn't seem to be some kind of a mechanism in place here that seems to, you know, it's fine to send in the military, and that's good, and they'll go in there with tents and all kinds of things, but this is going to take days to mobilize, and these ships are within the area. I mean, this is the season for that sort of thing. Anyway, it's just a comment that I...
Well, I think it's far from just a comment. What I'm finding out is that there is a, you know, there's a quantum of experience and a quantum of ideas here that are, you know, the so-called thinking outside the box that is desperately needed. But the question becomes one of whether or not we are, in the larger scheme, going to be capable of pulling it off. You know, I would like to hope that whatever that magnificent, big, beautiful, white naval hospital ship is already in Port-au-Prince, if not almost there. There's stuff that has to happen, and frankly, we've got to find a way. We got to get better at this, and that's why I go back to things like, you know, I remember the derision, John, with which Dennis Kucinich's idea of a Department of Peace was met. Now, well, what would that do? Sit around and sing Kumbaya? No, it would do exactly this, because sending in the military, it's bass ackwards.
Yeah, I think that would be a great thing for us to have in the world, and people could sign up and be members of in different countries. I think it could be, it might actually be a United Nations effort that actually might work when it. You know, what has the United Nations done in all of this? I mean, first thing I heard on the news is that they were worried about their employees, and that's fine. But, and I guess they should be, but, you know, they don't seem to have the ability to do very much, and it always seems to take so long. How many people probably died there because somebody couldn't get to them?
Yeah, and I'm told, by the way, that the USS Comfort, which is the hospital ship I referenced, is in fact en route. So, yeah,
okay.
Good.
So they are doing something like that.
Yeah, and I mean that's a fully outfitted free floating hospital on the order of magnitude of the size of the cruise ships you mentioned.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Well, anyway, I'm going to let you go, and I'll tell you, that lady that was on the before me, Sandra.
Yeah.
I'm in love with her.
John. Take a number.
Every time she's on, I just wake right up. I mean, she's got the energy. I love it when she's on.
Well, and frankly, in a very busy life, she absorbs and then turns around information in a way that frankly amazes me.
Very bright lady.
Indeed, indeed.
If she ever decides she wants to live in a cabin in the mountains in Vermont, my name's on the board.
Okay. All right. We're gonna have to hang up a Sandra board. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, John.
Bye.
Bye now. I think that's four or five now. No kidding. By the way, just to let you know, a lot of the blinking lights, I guess, grew tired of blinking or the phone died or whatever. And so I have lines open if you want to reestablish the pecking order, so to speak, and jump in. You are certainly more than welcome. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. This in, from David in Tennessee, help for Haiti. And this goes back to what I was saying with Sandra a few moments ago. No, Haiti will not, nor will they ever get the help and attention that they both need and deserve. A, there's no oil there. B, the country doesn't have an Israeli-sized lobby buying influence. And that's about the size of it. Indeed, indeed, indeed. Continuing on with another email, this coming in from Kate. My experience with cruise ships, one of those companies responded to Katrina relief here in Mississippi. The folks on the ship had it worse on the ship than they did in the tents in their backyard. The logistics are a nightmare. Floating ops center is one thing, but taking on the survivors didn't work out too well for the survivors. They all but got lost in the recovery system. You got to be a first responder to understand all of this, and thanks for sharing this with all the caring folks who are undoubtedly feeling helpless. Indeed. Indeed. Okay, so we will keep things rolling. We will go straight away back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, yeah, I sent what few shekels I could, but I feel very helpless at this time. It's the same exact feeling it is during Katrina. It's disgusting what with my mental illness condition, things like that, I'm mostly an online activist in other ways too. I've tried to warn people to do something about the coup d'etat that threw Mr. Aristide out of office in Haiti, and about the fact that the Haitian people for two or three years or more, too many of them, had to live off of their so-called biscuits and cookies were made partly of dirt. That's what they had to live on.
Yeah.
That's what the poorest country in the hemisphere is. I got a right-wing relative of mine that keeps trying to say it's Cuba because Castro's a communist. Cuba has a far superior healthcare system to ours and educational system. Michael Moore's movie, Sicko, though, brought out the healthcare system. This is disgusting the way we treated Haiti. Haitian volunteers and Haitian regular units in our War of 1812, I believe in the Revolutionary War, too, but they were independent Haitian units in the War of 1812, fought alongside Andrew Jackson, helped him to win the Battle of New Orleans, for God's sake, helped us to win the War of 1812 against that superpower at that time. We were still a very young nation, but the British Empire was the superpower still then in 1812. The writer I quoted for just a few days back, Alexander Colburn, one of his great ancestors was Walter Colburn, I believe it was Sir Walter Colburn. He burned down the White House in about 1814. But the fact is, we've ignored Haiti for far too long. They're great people. They're great national. And Pat Roberts, and God, excuse my language, but he meant that as a backhanded insult. You know that they made a deal with the devil. It's not just talking about the Haitian the voodoo religion, which is not, it's just like the Wiccan religion. It is not an evil religion. But he was also making a backhanded swipe of Haiti's, where they borrowed from the French, their original colonial ancestry there, from the Catholic tradition that is also very strong in Haiti. He's making a backhanded insult to that, too. He gets away with that. But the Haitian voodoo, like the Wiccan spiritualism religion, it's a very good, organic faith that cares about humanity. And it talks about, it in its own way, it brings us to something called karma. Karma, which is when you get what you reap what you sow. And that means whatever kind of, you know, intellectual seeds you plant, bad faith you plant, cynicism you plant, war profiteering or the false flag 9/11 attacks, the false flag December 25th, a so-called bombing attempt with that Nigerian kid, whatever kind of evil lies you plant, today's fear fascist economy is all for the profiteers instead of for the people. Dwight David Eisenhower himself, he must be rolling in his grave, too. He's the last good Republican that was ever in the White House. That all the money that's been spent on war, and he knew as the Supreme Commander in America's last good war, yes, it remains me, in World War II, Dwight David Eisenhower, and how he got that cynical, evil man, Richard Nixon, as his vice president, I it's beyond me still.
Well, that Brian, was a piece of very deliberate political calculus for its day and age, it was similar to McCain picking Sarah Palin.
Or in some ways, it could be like Obama picking Joe Biden, I suppose, yes.
Well, I mean, Eisenhower, up until the very last moment, was being very coy about whether he was interested in running as a Democrat or a Republican.
Yeah, that's right.
And when he did go Republican, he realized that he couldn't win without appealing to what in that era, you know, 1952, was a group as bad or worse than the teabaggers and the birthers and deathers and the tenthers and the rest of that crowd is now. And that was the rabid anti-communist force. And Richard Nixon was
American Activities
Committee, right.
The Joe McCarthyite fascist bastards.
Thing. Right. And Richard Nixon had been instrumental on HUAC in the House, and he had also been instrumental in the Senate. And he was a natural choice to carry along basically what were the budding branches of the John Birchers and the like.
And that crazed megalomaniac McCarthy was even towards his later, just as before his falls there, where his great fall came at the Army hearings there, the great lawyer that said, Senator, at long last, after all of this, all these accusations and all, have you no shame, sir? You know, to Senator McCarthy, this lawyer said, I forget the man's name who said it, but we're absolutely needed at that juncture, the sad time in history. And at this juncture in history, this is going back, with California's bankrupt now, too. They go back and they still have this governor, this Ayn Randian Milton Friedman worshiping Arnold Schwarzenegger, who hates the poor, hates the working class, he hates small business people because he sided with those energy, like Dick Cheney and the guy from Enron, Ken Lay, and the rest of the deregulation that drove up California's electricity and air conditioning and energy costs by over 250-300%. And they put many small businesses out of business because they couldn't afford, you know, the electricity, for God's sakes. Arnold Schwarzenegger, he was paid off big time by them. He continues to be paid off big time by them. This libertarian right-wing, social Darwinism against the people that built this country, this has got to end. That's the kind of thing that's got us into this war footing there. There's empire. We have troops are stationed in 177 different countries now. This is disgusting. This is not, the Nazi Germany couldn't have dreamed of this kind of world hegemony that we have now. We're trying to call it all, you know, every time an American soldier sets foot somewhere, you know, I'm sure that the Marines that are going to Haiti and all that, for the very short term, for the immediate emergency, they're going to try to do good, of course, and and that's the American spirit, or what it used to be, at least. I think our great men and women in the armed services, yes, they do want to do good. They'd like to stop firing their weapons and start firing up some stoves for some starving people and some, you know, giving them water and shelter. But they need a lot. They need infrastructure. You could see some of those big American contractors that built those totally wasteful and profiteers paradise type of buildings there in Haiti, including the president's own palace there, apparently. They were totally unconcerned about earthquakes, and yet the people there, the planning people there, they have them even there in Haiti, too. Yes, they do have planning people before you build something. They were warning them that these things are not going to hold in a fierce hurricane, which Haiti is why they had one last year. They know they're prone to that. And in earthquakes, too, they've had them in their history. The Caribbean has had some of the worst earthquakes on the planet. They don't happen, you know, because you think...
They don't happen a lot, but when they happen, they're ugly.
They're ugly, all right. They really are.
And, you know, the fright... Well, I was going to say, just to put a little bit of a cap on what we were saying, if you look at a map of the Western Hemisphere, an earthquake in Haiti is not good news for people on the eastern seaboard of the United States.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because
the plates are shifting, and that means the plates are going back to some kind of historical shift, perhaps to what the last severe earthquake they had was 200 years ago in Haiti. They may be going back to that. You know, Mother Earth is patient about how she moans and rolls and she also has a thing called karma, like I say, which is in the
wind. And the earth has a rhythm. The earth has a rhythm that because of the shortness and briefness of the span of our individual lives, we cannot conceptualize. When you consider, I saw this thing on the History Channel the other night about the formation of Yosemite Valley. out in California.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it's 250 million years ago, then 50 million years ago, and just 10 million years ago. And any time that a human narrator or whatever says just 10 million years ago, I kind of shake my head and I hear the marbles banging around, because at that point in time, we're talking about numbers we can't conceive, but that is the, you know, that's the time scale of Earth.
We're not even
a burp.
Our educational system, like I was just saying there about Cuba and about Michael Moore and his, you know, about the movie about the healthcare system in Cuba as well. But we have to start ingraining our own kids that that's their right to education for any American citizen. I believe up through at least the 4 years of college just to stay competitive in this world. That's their right. As long as they keep up the work and they keep the grades up and keep staying seriously and doing the mind sweat, the intellectual labor that Americans are taught to disdain and hate even. And they have to stop that. This is the short-sighted, cynical thinking. That's what these damn Republicans, rightists, and libertarians, these cynical, short-sighted people that will do anything. I believe they send even hit squads out to kill off somebody if they can lower their tax rate better than the other candidate. You know, we may sink further down into that way. I heard even that Blackwater was training people for some stupid movie there. I forget the title of it that just came out. But that, you know, they're still allowed to be a respectable so-called corporation, Blackwater or a Z, whatever it is now, is disgusting. These Republicans, these right-wingers, including too many phony Democratic Leadership Council Democrats and Blue Dog Democrats, these corporatists, they're so cynical they can't even think about their own children's future, about, you know, let alone grandchildren's future. We've got to get beyond that, Bob. You're right about that. Mother Earth is angry at that.
Oh, I get eaten. Yeah. I sit down and I start thinking about time, and it just drives me nuts because, as I mentioned the other night in our conversation with Dr. Ayers, I had just enough immersion in the world of archaeology for the time that's measured on clock faces to become absolutely irrelevant to me.
It was a great conversation, that part.
Well,
of it.
I was going to say, as I later proved to my archaeology professor by being perpetually late for class, and I just looked at her and said, hey, it's your fault.
Well, at that age too, that's a funny age too, 18 to 22 or whatever you're talking about here. But that's
time runs differently.
Yeah, that does a lot of teenagers too. It's the same. Your son, I'm sure, is teaching about his own time span and his own theories about time there. But it's just I'll let you go. From that conversation there with Dr. Ayers, I got it all lined up, and I was just looking into the United States of Appalachia and his book there too, his writings there. Professor Mann as well, and about the Battle of Blair Mountain too. I want to get into that, but I now right the last few days I'm going more and more over information about Haiti at this point.
Well, yeah, kind of demands it, doesn't it? Hey, Brian, good to hear from you, my friend.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now.
Bye.
And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Bob. This is Andy from New Jersey.
Hey, Andy. Good to hear from you.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Hey, I just wanted to say on this Haiti tragedy, and you know, beyond a tragedy, Haiti is what happens when you let the Chicago boys go wild. You know, let Milton Friedman and his laissez-faire libertarian policies, where you have no public services, no police forces, no firemen, no real established military, no National Guard, nothing. Everything is just privatized and stripped. And you have nothing to help these people out, no infrastructure. And this is the same thing they want to do here in the United States.
Andy, why is that so, and I don't mean easy to be in any way derogatory toward the idea that you brought up, but this is, why is that so simple for the likes of us to grasp, and yet we can't find anybody who will stand up on the floor of the House or the Senate and look these bastards in the eye and say it to them?
You know, I listen to NPR, and I listen to the Diane Rehm show.
I love her, by the way.
You do you?
Yeah.
Sometimes, I'm sorry, I want to slip my wrist when I listen to her. The other day she had...
But sometimes I want to slip my wrist when I listen to me, so, you know, I got it. Maybe I come at it from a different perspective, but I know. It's a different style.
She had somebody on from the Cato Institute who was talking about the privatization and how the way to get the country back on the correct footing is to start privatizing the schools, you know, go to all the charter schools, start privatizing the services, particularly the postal service is a good thing to take a shot at and just completely split it off of any government control, any agency relationship with the government, make that completely privatized. Take all the airports, privatize all those, all the hospitals if they're not already privatized. And, gee whiz, what that does is it takes, like Tom Hartman says, it just takes away from the commons. It takes away control that we have over the system to having no control. And we have no control over pricing and pay. And then they'll de-unionize. That's why in the private sector you have no unions. It's easy for them to just destroy the union cause. And then when you create these privatized institutions, they turn around and use that money that they get to bribe the politicians to get more.
Yes. But see, I think part of the problem, Andy, is that we're our side and their side is coming at it almost speaking different languages, because what you just said is so cogent. You know, and you remarked on Hartman saying that, you know, it always. You know, it never takes away from some other corporation. They'll do that in a merger. It takes away from the commons. But underpinning that, Andy, is the assumption that it's, and I think it is a correct one, that it is good to have a commons. You see, in their world and in their language, the commons is nothing but stuff they haven't got yet.
Right.
And so.
They want to eat up, and that's what Goldman Sachs, that's the objective of a Goldman Sachs, because the more they're able to take away from the commons, the more they're able to increase their profits, because it becomes a corporation, and they cater to corporations by raising capital. So instead of the public sector raising capital, and a lot of that capital is raised through taxes, you take away the tax element. So now you have to do it in the private sector. And who wins in the private sector? Wall Street. So that's why Wall Street just loves the privatization. Privatize everything, because then they get to become the investment banker, and you take away the taxing power of government.
Well, yeah, and that's why there's no shame in taking bailout money and giving these magnificent bonuses. They feel like
there's no shame whatsoever.
No, well, I mean, you know, the right wing is forever, Andy, talking about an entitlement class. You know, and what they mean by entitlement class when they're talking about it. Like that jackass John Linder from Georgia who was griping about food stamps, when they talk about an entitlement class or a dependency class, they mean somebody who is struggling to stay alive while carrying this nation on their backs. But we create an entitlement class. But the entitlement class we create is not somebody spending $3 a day for food on two boxes of Rice-A-Roni. The entitlement class we do and have created, Andy, is up on Wall Street, where they don't feel any shame about taking bailout money and passing it around amongst themselves. You know, I mean, I'm certainly not mathematically inclined, and economics 9 times out of 10 baffles me. But the fact of the matter is, if I had followed a path, as is the case with most of the people listening to this program, if I had followed a path, I could, you know, most of us could have wound up somewhere within that investment, you know, that Wall Street oriented system, you know, maybe a job as a stockbroker working at a brokerage branch in downtown small town America. But that's still part of that world. We could have done that. But
I did do that.
Oh, well, you prove my point.
I used to be a stockbroker, yep.
But it
have all the licenses. Anyway.
Well, but I mean, but see, you're not now, right?
No, I'm not.
There's got to. I'm not going to go into. I don't want to go into details, but there's got to be a reason for that.
I'm still in the business, though.
Yeah, but you're not.
I believe me, I'm like a square peg in a round hole, big time.
I think under the circumstances, you would just about have to be. But I mean, does that sense of entitlement exist within that system? Am I right?
No, it's the corporate welfare state. You're absolutely correct. And these people just, their greed, the amount that they think they deserve, that they deserve it, it's it all. It's just this enormous braggadocio, or they're such pompous braggarts that they deserve it all. It's just an amazing thing. There's like no feeling for their fellow man or what they might be doing to others when they just suck out the rest of the heartland of this country with what they're doing. It's just an amazing. There's no remorse. There's no thought. It's just, it's all there.
Now I was talking about time a few minutes ago with Brian. Is it because the scale of time is literally so compressed? I mean, you know, the turnaround on a stock can be almost impossible to calculate, can't it? But that's the time that matters in that world. And so since that time is compressed, Andy, then larger issues like long-term growth and, you know, buy and hold strategies and stuff like that, they go out the window if your money's on the turn, don't they?
Well, certainly a lot of people here are definitely geared to short-term profits, making the biggest killing they can in the shortest period. And of course, a lot of it's now done via machine. It's all computerized. The computerized trading where things are happening so quickly, and they're just shaving off pennies on the dollar. But you shave off enough pennies on the dollar, it adds up to a lot of money if you're doing it in nanoseconds.
You know, I'll never forget.
And gaming the system, which, you know, a retail trader has no chance competing.
Right. Well, and it goes back to the Amex issue that we were talking about earlier. Look at, you know, from January 12th to February 28th, a bunch of money. Yeah, you're going to rebate the money later, but it's some date. But there's a bunch of money laying around getting shaved, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oui.
I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt you before.
No, you didn't interrupt me. I mean, I'm just
crazy.
I can't get my head. I can't, you know, I had an economist from the U.K., I shared a beer with him in a hotel in D.C. about this time last year, and he was explaining to me about profit taking on the 16th decimal place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was one beer, not number 12 or whatever. It was beer one, and even at beer one, how can you possibly take, you know, what kind of volume of money has to be involved, Andy, for there to be any meaningful profit to be taken on the 16th or even the 8th decimal place?
If you're doing it fast enough, you can just keep on shaving off these pennies and you end up making money. There's a lot of rocket scientists on the street with these super fast computers that are doing that sort of work. And there's one guy that's an ex-computer science professor from Stanford, and now he keeps undercover, but he's got a pretty large staff of some of the most intelligent computer brains that he can suck up in the world to work for his firm. I can't remember, but he was a professor at Stanford. He does that. He specializes in that, in taking just the fractional, like 16th of a thousandth or something like that, just like you were saying, and doing that through high-speed computers, and just shaving off these slim profits, but doing it so quickly and so fast that it adds up for real money.
Well, is there, realistically, Andy, is there any kind of regulation out there that would ever rein any of that in? Does it need to be reined in?
Well, tax these trades. But it used to be that way. There used to be tax on trade. You put some kind of...
I'm sorry.
So if you're doing these trades really fast, you're going to get hit with taxes on them. So it might not be worthwhile to do it when you're making such slim profit. But now,
is there an overall economic downside? I mean, you know, to tax those transactions?
They'll try to make that case that there is, but I don't think so. Not at all. They used to do it.
Mind-boggling. And
I mean, these people make, you know, so much money on a lot of their trading. If you're into, and it's not investing, in my mind, when you're trading in and out of things, all day long. And that's just what it is. It's trading. It's not investing, which is what our pensions are supposed to do. And that, of course, destroys our pension by doing that kind of trading. It just becomes, you know, a game, which is what it is. You know what I wanted to say, too, about this whole thing in Haiti, got off on the business stuff, but it just kills me, too. Obama appointed Bill Clinton and Bush to go down there. And here you got Clinton, who was the guy who brought Aristide back the first time he got knocked down. He was the people's guy, the guy that was supposed to help, you know, help workers, help the lower class people.
Yeah, he was a priest at one point, wasn't he?
Ex-priest, right, was going to do all these things, the minimum wage and give people benefits and decent working conditions and all that. Of course, the corporate just didn't like that. Clinton brings him back, and Clinton does this deal with him that he's got to do free trade down there. And this is Tom Hartman mentioned this too today. That Clinton does this deal, you can come back, but you got to open up the trade with the U.S. So they opened up a lot of the agricultural products to the U.S., and particularly rice, according to Hartman, just wiped them out because we dumped all these rice products on the Haitians. Of course, they couldn't compete with our oversupply that we were dumping on them, wiped out their rice crops, and then he put all these farmers and small farmers in destitution, and they got to move to cities like Port-au-Prince and try to find other meager ways to make a living and cause all these slums and ghettos.
Well, isn't that the way predatory capitalism is supposed to work?
Right. The agriculture system is wiped out. And that Clinton did that. And then you have Bush, who basically does a coup d'etat with the CIA, goes down and puts a gun to Aristide's head, says, get on this plane, and we're going to drop you off in Africa, send him to Chad and drop him off there, and you're gone. Again, because he was doing things that the corporatists didn't like, helping out the working people. And he's going to put both of those people down there on charge of bringing the country back. That's wonderful. What irony.
Well, you know, I got that story sent to me a little bit ago by News Ninja Gene, who just presaged the story with, "Please, Mr. President, no." But I guess this is that star power thing. I mean, and it's all glad handing and log rolling, isn't it? You know, because W asked Clinton to work with his daddy on the tsunami, so now naturally Obama has to ask Clinton to work with W. I hate to say this in the midst of a tragedy as broad and as tremendous as it is, but you know what? W going to Haiti is going to be one of those, you know it, it's going to be one of those nights where I just get my show done for me.
Make me want to vomit.
Yeah.
Mercy.
You know, remember when he went and danced, W did? Remember that photo of him with his with his hands up in the air? Was he dancing in Africa, was it?
I think so. He dances everywhere. And, of course, I think he was in Ecuador or something like that, and some Ecuadorian Indians, the shamans, came through and cleaned everything up because they wanted to make sure that they got away all the evil spirits where W had been.
Yeah, because those guys can probably see actual auras.
And, of course, you got Hugo Chavez down there who believes that he can actually, smell the sulfur of Bush.
Yeah, he said that at the United Nations, didn't he?
Yeah. A matter of fact, Hugo Chavez sent supposedly some relief to Haiti very quickly before the U.S. again. I think he did the same thing in New Orleans, too.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Cubans had stepped in as well.
Yeah, well, they got, a lot of medical people down there anyway. Of course, they're so close geographically, it should be easy for them to
exactly. Help. Well, Andy, it's great hearing from you. I'm glad you picked up the phone. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, like everybody else on, I love listening to your show. You got a great show, and some of the folks you got on there just are so insightful. Great. I'll give kudos to Brian, man. I've never seen anybody talk so quickly and spout out such truth in a short period of time that it's just mind-boggling to catch everything coming out of his mouth. And it's
Well, you know, I had what he mentioned this evening. I had no idea that that Haitian troops had fought alongside American forces at the Battle of New Orleans. I didn't know that at all. They left that out when they were singing they were playing the Johnny Horton song about the Battle of New Orleans for me when I was in elementary school.
Well, just like the same thing with Blair Mountain. How often do you hear that story happening in 1921? I knew there were a lot of battles and a lot of Union scuffles that went on in West Virginia, but I don't think I've ever really heard about the Blair happening in 1921.
Well, I tell you what, Andy,
it happened in the 30s during the Depression, but not that early, right after World War One.
It's
because my grandfather was a coal miner in Pennsylvania.
Well, then he probably lived a lot of similar stuff, you know, because you go into Western Pennsylvania, and you get the Molly Maguires, and that's as dirty a piece of anti-worker skullduggery that had, not the Molly Maguires themselves, but what was done to wipe them out. As dirty a piece of anti-worker skullduggery as this country's ever produced. But now granted it's fictionalized, but if you want to see a magnificent film that touches on that same era the event that presaged, the armed march on Logan, John Sayles' film, you know, John Sayles doesn't know how to make a bad movie. John Sayles' film from what, 1985, 1986, Matewan, M-A-T-W-A-N.
Yeah, I remember seeing it in the theater. It was great.
That's a re-rent because everything that happened at Matewan is part of why the armed march on Logan took place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just how can I put this? If America knew, I mean, if you consider the American fascination with the Western, you know, the Western as a film genre, if America knew everything that happened in Appalachia and the coal fields, Andy, there would be an entire new film genre rise up. Because, I mean, you've got stories, you know, Two Gun Sid Hatfield, who was in the Matewan film, the guy who stood down the gun thugs when they were trying to do the evictions, I know, a long time ago. But later on, he was gunned down, murdered on the steps of the McDowell County Courthouse, by anti-union gun thugs from the Baldwin-Felts Detective Agency, one of whom was the brother of one of the Feltzes that got killed at Matewan. It was strictly a revenge killing. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing new when we see the horrors that take place in Iraq and Afghanistan. We act like that's something foreign. It's in our nature. It's what we do. They gunned down Two Gun Sid. Murdered him on the steps of the McDowell County Courthouse. Then the guys who killed him were indicted and tried for murder and walked.
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me.
And
the problem we fight is, and it's the same way now, our court system, of course, under Bush, one of the things the Chamber of Commerce has tried to do all over this country is to put their judges in that are pro-business, pro-corporatist judges. And after Bush, you know, the whole Justice Department, from the Supreme Court on down, our whole judiciary is just full of these thugs, these corporatist thugs. And if you think you're going to get any justice before, man, you got to think again, unless you get somebody that was put in the Carter era or possibly the Clinton era. But, you know, they did their best to stop Clinton from appointing any judges.
Yes, they did. And they succeeded. Andy.
They did. Right.
And then a scant few years later, we're screaming on the floor of the Senate, all we want is an up or down vote.
Hmm.
When that's exactly what they wouldn't give any Clinton appointees.
Right. 100 filibusters.
I mean, well, yeah, and to Harry Reid's discredit, he's let it go on.
Right.
All it would have taken was to say, okay, that's fine, but you're really going to have to do it. Somebody get this guy a phone book.
Right.
Don't go pee.
I want it back to the days where you got a guy like Strom Thurmond who's got to hold it in and not drink any water for hours so he can stand up there reading that phone book. I want to see some of those old Republicans.
Well, filibuster, that's the thing.
Standing up there doing it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, well, as originally constituted, the filibuster is a concept that was supposed to be supremely difficult.
Exactly, and what they did was they made it supremely simple and easy. And And didn't they think that they would take advantage of it? And, of course, the Democrats, what have they filibustered even once in the last 4 years or 5 years? I don't even think they've done it once. And here the Republicans do it every single chance they get to obstruct.
Well, look, Bernie Sanders put a hold on Ben Bernanke's renomination, right? That got cleared up and blown away and cleaned out and never, and just boom, it was over. On the other hand, Jim DeMint wants to keep the guy, keep the TSA from having a head man. Well, that's been going on for months.
Right. He's still out of there.
Now, how is that not a failure of the Democratic leadership in the Senate?
Absolutely. That's why I totally agree with you, what you were saying about Mr. Reed the other evening, man. Maybe he'll get blown out in his little election that he doesn't seem to be even to get Nevada under control.
Well, Garrett out there in Vegas says, yeah, he's toast.
Yeah.
Of course it would
and
be
the
not.
The thing is, go ahead.
No, you, please.
I was just going to say, the other thing the Republicans do, too, is they do the same thing in California, too, except they do it with the budgetary process, making it so you have to have a supermajority, you have to have a two-thirds vote to pass the budget. So you've got this slim cadre of neoliberal Republicans that hold up the budget there until they get exactly what they want.
Right, and going back to the
everything.
Going back to the original theme, the whole goal is to hamstring government. You know, the right wing threw around, well, you know, the Dixie Chicks are anti-American, all of that stuff. I try to forget it, but it won't go away. But these people, these right wingers, really are anti-American, Andy. They really, really are. Because their goal is to disassemble the absolute basic nature of our country.
Right. But they don't want majority rule.
They want Somalia. They do. They want Haiti. You know, the coal interests in Central Appalachia. They, you know, they want government to get out of their way.
Right.
They want to blow it all up. They want to turn Appalachia into Haiti.
Right.
And economically speaking, they largely have. Our water's poison. Our children are dying.
Right. Rape and pillage. That's all they want, and they come out on top. And just as long as they can come out on top, and then they strangle you with a police state. So you can't do anything to stop it. You know, there used to be a time in this country where we actually used to have strikes, and we actually used to just slow down the wheels of this cooperative system, and that doesn't happen anymore at all. They've completely knocked that out. And if you can't go on strike, you can't stop this cooperative wheel from turning, then you have nothing. There's no way the people can get it back, because that's what they're scared of. They want, all they care about is profit and getting their dollars and cents. And if we don't have a way to stop that, God, we're really hosed.
And you know what? It goes so far back in our history, Andy. Remember, one of the reasons that Alexander Hamilton couldn't hold office was because of his bastard nature, having been born of the son of a plantation owner. What, in Barbados? But somewhere in the Caribbean.
He was an illegitimate child.
Yeah. And as such, he comes up to the America, to the colonies, and lo and behold, you know, the apple falleth not far from the tree, and all of his economic ideas about what the government should or should not be stem from that rapine and pillage approach to economy that was holding forth in the Caribbean, even as he wrote back and forth with Madison in the Federalist Papers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know, the Haitian tragedy has at least opened a door to a discussion of A, why countries wind up like Haiti has wound up, and to what degree we had a hand in it. And there's no way, and yet, you know, who's out there, apart from a few people, you know, the Horn, Malloy, Hartman, you know, maybe talking about the fact that the Haitian disaster, no, we're not accountable for the literal moving of the earth, but we are by God accountable for what the earth moved under.
Right. Well, again, it goes back to the Chicago boys. Just privatize everything. Take it away from the commons. Put it in the hands of private industry. And then you don't tax the rich. And you don't have a representative government anymore. And the whole system just falls apart for the majority of the people.
You know, I would never suggest that anyone take advantage of this tragedy, both either ideologically, politically, or emotionally. But at some point down the road, somebody's got to stand up, and I'm sorry, but it's got to happen in the Congress. Somebody's got to stand up in the Congress and say, this is what they want. Do you want America to be a great big Haiti? Do you want America to be a great big Somalia? If you don't, you'd better run these suckers out with the pitchforks at their backs. But until that time, we are at hazard, Andy.
Now, I think Dennis Kucinich tries to do that quite a bit, but the problem is you don't have the corporate media, you don't have the megaphone to really get that message across. He's made to look like some kind of a fool by the media, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know.
But he does day in and day out. He voices that message, and that's why.
And to a large extent, so does
the guy.
So does Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And so do a few others, but they are too far and they are too few and too far between.
Absolutely, I can count them on my fingers.
I know. Andy, have a wonderful evening. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, you too, Bob. Great talking to you, man. Keep up the great work.
Oh, thank you so much. We'll sure try. Look forward to hearing from you again.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye now. That's Andy calling from New Jersey. And too many blinking lights. Let's just keep going. No, see what you do to me? Here we go. No. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, David, what's up?
Two things before I start. American Airlines is now accepting any people of medical personnel, professionals, doctors, nurses. You can fly for free. And the second thing is UPS packages to ship to Haiti are for free as well. So use that at your use that as you will on that. Now, what I called about, I think some people find interesting. My friend is the DJ, and he is doing a 24-hour marathon for fundraising for Haiti with Yele, Mercy Corps, and Doctors Without Borders. And basically, the concept is this. It's called 24 Hours to Give, and he DJs for 24 hours, and you, your friends, and family, you can kindly donate whatever you can to the charity of your choice to help the communities who are affected by this earthquake. If you want to listen in, it starts at 7 p.m. Friday. And the radio link to listen to it is GenerationNextRadio.com, GenerationNextRadio.com. That's with no www. And for those who don't know, this is a hip-hop radio station. We launched it last week, and we do a four-hour show. We're bringing out other shows, and it's five nights a week, and every night it's different. We have a selection of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of songs. So believe me, if you've ever want to learn about hip-hop and you want to experience live mixing for 24 hours, then tomorrow is the place to be at 7, I guess it starts at 7 p.m. and goes on till Saturday at 7 p.m.
Wow, cool, fun.
And just so people understand, this is a professional New York DJ. He had a radio show in the 90s, and he knows what he's doing, and apparently he's already got Kevin Powell on board, who ran for Congress. And he's getting the word out, so if you guys want to check it out, you can go to aoplaya.com at aoplaya.com, and you go to the boards and you can see the message there. But anyways, I just wanted to bring attention to this 24 hours marathon. I think he's crazy, but he thinks he can do it. We'll see if he can. But it should be something, and to see how much he can raise with this. And hopefully he can raise some money for it.
Awesome. So, it needs doing.
What's that?
It needs doing. So, will there be donation links right there?
I think what he's going to do is, yeah, there'll be donations. If you go to GenerationNextRadio.com, when we start, there's a chat room there too. So we'll probably be posting a contribution and donation links to all the sites like ELA, Mercy Corps, and Doctors Without Borders, and just hopefully we hope to get some guests as well. See what happens and see who tunes in and all that kind of thing. We hope to get some celebrities and stuff like that involved as well. And I don't know. So the event is called 24 Hours to Give, and if you ever wanted to listen to some
that's a cool name, by the way.
Yeah, I know. He's smart when it comes to promoting. If you ever want to listen to some hip hop for 24 hours, I guess tomorrow's the time at 7 p.m.
Excellent. Well, okay, for our purposes, 9 p.m. Okay, midnight.
Yeah, for your
me, purpose. Then Malloy, then listen.
Yeah, well, I mean, just tune in whenever you want to. I mean, no.
No, I'm playing. I'm being playful. I mean, you know.
I know. But, I just wanted to mention that. And I also wanted to mention that about this Haiti situation, you mentioned that as long as we keep the discussion open and talk about it and dialogue about it, the problem with that is the fact that most people want an easy answer in this country. And the easy answer that you give them is they just made the wrong mistakes, and we blame it on the country itself rather than looking at the...
Well, fortunately for us, I don't think anyone here is... Well, I think it's abundantly clear, at least within the Horn family, that Haiti is not responsible for Haiti's mistakes, because Haiti's mistakes are not Haiti's mistakes.
I understand what you're saying, but as far as the mainstream and the masses, believe me, that's the message that's already been injected and it's already been indoctrinated. And believe me, they do that with everywhere. They would do that with West Virginia. Because it's the easiest way to digest it. And I know people get mad at that and they don't understand that. But listen, we live in a hyper-attention deficit world. And people take what they can with the information that they get. And a lot of times they make the wrong choices. It's really that simple.
I understand what you're saying and I don't disagree.
Yeah.
But you know what my nature is, David.
Yeah, I know.
How do you solve it? How do you solve that? How do you change that? Just like me asking Andy, what does it take for us to get 1, 2, 3 members of Congress to stand up in the House and say these right-wing conservacreeps who want deregulation? What does it take to get one person to stand up and look one of them in the eye and say, you rotten son of a bitch, what you're saying here is you want Somalia, you want Haiti, and you want it for this country? What does it take?
I think the sad reality is I watched the Road this week, and I think the sad reality is it has to happen before that happens. So in essence, it's almost like it's too late, but you're just doing it.
You have to, in other words, they have to be given their way before the American people will look up and say, this sucks.
Yeah, pretty much. I think pretty much that's what's going to happen. And I pretty much, like I've mentioned this before, but my family and my parents, they come from a fairly circle of progressive friends, but the reality is, people, for the military, and for a lot of people out there, in those circles who believe in the military and all of that, and I know a lot of people don't want to think this, but they really do. A lot of real smart, intelligent people do listen to Fox News. They do take Sarah Palin's words for gospel. And when they do read quite a bit books, and they still take her word as gospel because they see her as a charming woman. And that's the truth. That's happening all across the nation. I mean, if I could share you some of my emails that my dad gets from a lot of people who are in his, when he was in Vietnam, or people who graduated from university, you name it, with degree after degree, and what they come up with, it's insanity personified. But then I think about it, we live in a hyper-attention deficit world. They've been indoctrinated so deeply that you can't change it, because what happens is when you try to confront it, others say, I don't know about that. And that's the problem. That's what we face.
Because it's easier to not do it and succeed than to attempt it and risk failure.
Pretty much.
Yeesh. I wasn't raised that way, David.
But let's close with something hopeful. There's the 24 Hours to Live broadcast starting at 7 p.m., ending at 7 p.m. Friday, ending at, and that's 4 p.m. Pacific time, ending Saturday at 7 p.m., 4 p.m. Pacific time. You can go to GenerationNextRadio.com, and the festivities should start at 7, and we look forward to seeing
you. Well, do me a favor, because I have the attention span of a moth. David,
yeah.
Poke me somewhere along the way, because frankly, if I crank it up back here and turn up the speakers, I will have three very happy little teenagers in the house.
Okay.
I don't necessarily get that hip hop music, but you know, and no, I'm kidding. I do. I love a lot of it, but my children are convinced that I'm terminally uncool.
Well, I think a lot of people.
And I'd hate to ruin that for them.
I think a lot of people get a vast history. We cover all the decades and all the different eras of a lot of the important eras and movements in hip-hop.
Will you be playing any of that DJ Jazzy Jeff?
You know what?
I should be beaten for that, David.
A lot of people see him as a joke DJ in the.
I don't. I was trying to.
But that's the consensus because of his time on the sitcom. But really, he's a really important DJ. He's as instrumental and as important as Jam Master Jay is for New York with Run DMC, as Jazzy Jeff is for Philly. So.
Yeah, and then, you know, you can, if you want to do root stuff, you go backwards and, you wind up with Bootsy's Rubber Band and Parliament Funkadelic and.
Yeah.
I mean, because while it is not necessarily per se that, everything exists along a continuum and there's no, you know, with no musical form, is there a here's where it begins? Or in very rare cases, is there?
Right. You know, DJing and the art of DJing and the art of mixing developed out of the
Yeah, and now is this and is that what you're describing? Because DJ may mean two different things to you and me.
Yeah.
I'm an old jock, and that means I sat behind a microphone and played records on the radio and talked in between them. That is not what you're talking about.
Right. No. I'm actually talking about he's going to I don't know how he does it, but he's going to pick. Records on the fly, spontaneous for 24 hours. He has a set of digital turntables.
I was going to say, does he have? Yeah. Oh God, I love the digital turntables. Those are so cool.
Yeah, and once again, people, the event is called 24 Hours to Live, 24 Hours to Give, and you go to GenerationNextRadio.com without the www, and it starts at 7 p.m. tomorrow, Friday.
Excellent. And you will send me a little poke somewhere along the way.
Oh, yes. I will send you this, and I'll probably be calling in sometime 6:40, or maybe I'll be giving you an update of how it's going around the time before you close the show tomorrow.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks, David.
All right, no problem, Bob.
All right, later.
Later.
Bye now. That is 24 Hours to Give, Generation Next Radio, beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow evening. And we roll along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob the Rebop.
Hey, Juanita. I'm sorry, Prophetess Juanita. You know, my goodness gracious, you nailed Pat Robertson's pelt to the wall.
Well, you know, I wish I had all that stuff, but I got mad and throwed it all away that I got from him. But he recycles.
Well, and that's the thing. You'd heard
it. That makes him predictable, you know.
But you'd be surprised the number of decent human beings out there who are shocked. I mean, even as crazy as we know Pat Robertson is, are shocked that he would say such a thing. I mean, and you could even say that about Don Imus.
Yeah, they are, uh-huh.
Because they're not there listening to this insanity every day.
You betcha.
You betcha there. who's your favorite founding father? I love them,
yeah. Especially George Washington.
Even that communist Thomas Jefferson? That liberal?
I can't get over Lindbeck saying his favorite one is Thomas Paine, because that's my favorite one.
Well, the funny thing about that, Glenn Beck has never read Thomas Paine, or he's never read anything past These Are the Times That Try Men's Souls.
Because he was against slavery and everything, you know.
He was an atheist, and a mean one.
Bob and I was attracted to atheists, I don't know.
Well, I, you know.
There's nothing about you.
Well, hey, wait, who said? Yeah. I ain't necessarily.
No, you're not atheist, but. Whatever.
Yeah, at best, I'm agnostic.
Yeah, I respect people's,
I just refuse to believe that anything that has a hand in the running of the universal order of things, that I've got any business trying to define it.
Trying to what?
Trying to define it. You know.
Well, yeah, that's sort of hard to do. But, you know, when you get desperate sometime, you might get to know him.
Well, hey, look, you know, I get spoken to by the universe all the time. But I don't. But
trees.
Yeah, right.
You were talking the other day about vegetation having feelings.
Yeah.
When my son was small, I used to tell him that the reason trees had roots, because if they didn't, they would run away from all of them. But it talks in the Bible about them talking, clapping.
Well, you know, one of my favorite verses out of the Psalms says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth His handiwork."
Yeah.
And you know, it's only in the 20th century that we developed the ability to listen into space, and space is just noisy as can be.
Yeah.
All kind of bleeps and blaps and beeps and honks and
yeah.
Who knows what the heavens are declaring?
I know it.
But they're talking.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you have somebody else most, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about Haiti and then a little bit about what you said about Cubans.
Yes.
And by the way, there's 300 daughters from Cuba in Haiti now.
Good.
Do you remember when they offered to send us?
Oh yeah, and George W.
Katrina.
Right, and George W. said he'd rather have folks floating in the canals than being helped by some commie doctor.
And also, Chavez.
Right.
He offered a ton of help, and he still helps some of the states that accepted the help back then.
Oh yeah, with the heating oil program and.
Yeah. But. I was outside. We had the bush. You know, we had freezes down here, like a number of days of freezes. And I've got this big bush out in the front yard. It's got purple flowers on it, and it'll live through anything. But if it gets cold, it freezes back. And it was brushing up against my place. And my son said, "We need to get out there and, you know, cut that back." And I was out there. And anyway, you know, when it gets, you never know how tall those things are until you cut them down. But,
oh, you know, I remember, gosh, it was, what, 3 years ago now, that I went down to Alabama with my father. And as it turns out, it was some of the most precious time we ever shared.
Oh.
But there's a strip of land behind what was then his house, and this big storm drainage ditch.
Uh-huh.
And it belonged, that was a right-of-way that belonged to the city of Florence, but while we weren't allowed to own it or to fence up to it, or you know, fence all the way to the ditch, the city of Florence refused to maintain the right-of-way, and it had become a jungle.
We got those places out here, too.
And Dad said, if I go and get you a weed eater, boy, will you clean that up for me? And I said, I will, Dad.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're familiar with locust trees, but those things.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, they're just evil, thorny things. I mean, the thorns grow out in the thorns grow among the bark. They're just vile.
I guess I've not been around many.
And they will sprout. They will send up sprouts from their own roots, and I mean, they are pernicious.
Oh yeah. That's bad.
And they'll grow like overnight up to, you know, full on tree size. You know, there's no sampling stage. It's just locust sprout, locust tree. And they're hard as iron, and that's what makes them great fence posts, but never mind. But this whole swath of ground that was maybe it was 75 feet wide by about 15 feet deep, had been taken over by a locust jungle with all kinds of pernicious the weeds and stuff growing in it. And I just waded into it with that weed eater and sat there and hacked and cleaned and cut and dragged all that brush up into the backyard into a big pile and then started dragging it out because the yard was about 250 feet deep from the curb to the ditch. And dragging it all, and this was, you know, April, May, warm weather coming to, as it beautifully does in that area. And dragging it up to the street to be have it hauled away by the street department. And it didn't look like there was that much there, but my goodness gracious, by the time I was done, Juanita, I had enough for an Indian mound. I mean, it was literally mounded up about 20 feet high in the backyard.
Oh wow, yeah.
And I had those heavy brush gloves on, and those daggum locust thorns were still going through the palms of those things. Oh, it hurt. Oh, it was, and you know, somewhere along the way I was, isn't there a poison I can spray on this stuff? No. Locusts laugh at poison. When you bring us some more poison, Bob, that was tasty. Yeesh.
Well, the reason I brought this up was I was outside, you know, and I was trying to pull on those little trunks and all, you know, it has several, like, trunks. It's a bush, but they get real thick. And I was pulling on them because I didn't want them to get up close and to my place, and somebody accidentally set them on fire because they, you know, they were really burnt out. And I heard this voice saying, Mama, you don't need to be doing that, in a French accent.
Oh.
And a lot of the people that I meet, they call me Mama. Like, I have this friend, he has a little store about a block from us. He's from Lebanon.
Why am I not surprised, Juanita?
And he'll say, Mama, you remember now, Jesus loves you, and he's always with you, even if you don't feel him. But he's always with you. But anyway, I heard this voice say, Mama, you don't need to be doing that. And he was with another guy, and I said, because where I live on in a small suburb, and I live on the main drag, and we got a sidewalk in front, on one side in front of my place, and they get out, you know, different ones gets out, and you see all kind of people going by. So I said to him, "Are you Haitian?" He said, "Yes, ma'am." And so I got to talking to him. And he's got a lot of relatives down there, and I was telling him that how sorry I was about it and that my heart broke for him and all. And I said, it's such a poor country. And he said, yeah. And he was just really nice. And we were talking about, you know, the first night when they couldn't really do much of anything, some of the Christians went out and were singing Christian songs. Singing songs about that, and they said it was really beautiful in an eerie atmosphere because, you know, the people just walk, and don't you think they're magnificent people? See, they're expecting them to be raging and all, raging wolves, the way some of the reporters talk.
Yeah.
And look how calm, you know, but he said they're tough people, you know, they've had so much problems.
And he said they're very tough people. And I got a, there's a church down the street from this Haitian church. I've been thinking about going. Well, I've just gotten out of the habit of going to church. But I think maybe I might go down there. Because I've met some other people like that. And to me, they're some of the most wonderful Christian people that I've ever met, you know, in comparison. And I just want to say that, you know, that don't send any money to Pat Robertson.
What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet, though, Juanita, that whatever huckster jive he's got going on is one of those 65 groups on the approved list at American Express?
Well, did you know that that when he was talking about all of that, that he was had up there to send money to Operation Blessing for Haiti?
Oh, my God. Well, Samaritan's Purse is at it. And remember,
well,
Franklin Graham. Yeah.
Franklin Graham, yeah.
And of course, Samaritan's Purse's aircraft was the one that was used to swan Sarah Palin all over Creation
right,
to her book.
On her bus tour.
Yeah, the bus to the bus that she didn't ride.
Right. Yep. But I just wanted to say, you know, it's so nice to talk. And, you know, Psyche really appreciated it. Because what else could I do?
Well, you know, this is a weird little pitch, but if you take the time to watch a show like Tony Bourdain's No Reservations, you know, the reason that I watch that show on the Travel Channel.
I'm not familiar with that.
It's on the Travel Channel. Lots of reruns, but the first airings are always Monday at 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason I like it so much is it's not him standing in a kitchen and saying, "And now we're going to make the Puy Fousse sauce with the morel mushrooms." Yuck. The guy goes and invariably, there'll be some scenes of him dining in swank, but it's obvious, it's really abundantly obvious that what he's doing, where his joy is seeing what regular folks eat and how regular folks live all around the world, and that he's got a reverence and a respect for it. And what you find out watching that program, it's a reinforcement that, you know, no, we're not all that different. We might have different cultural traditions. We might speak a different language.
And we're not all that smarter
either. No, we are certainly no smarter.
No, we're probably not as smart.
Yeah, Tobias in the chat room just said, yeah, the show is about culture, not food.
Well, didn't Kevin say he had some Haitian friends and they could get a car running no matter what?
It might have been Jamaican.
But who else can do that? You know.
Well, you know, look at what happened in Cuba after the embargo. There are 55 Chevys still running.
Yeah, right.
All over Cuba, and some of them have been retrofitted to run on kerosene.
Yeah.
Because, you know, gasoline was made scarce because we were trying to starve the Cuban people to death, so that maybe they would get starved enough to rise up and run Fidel off. Oddly enough, instead of doing that, they realized that the Fidel said, "Hey, look at what the American people are doing to you," and they rallied around Fidel. And yet, oddly enough, we're still doing the same thing in other countries, saying, "Well, you know what we need to do is we need to be even rottener to the people of Iran, and then when the United States is rotten to them, they'll hate their leaders."
Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's one of those things that's reasonably easy to sort through and figure out among intelligent people of goodwill like we have here among the Horn family, but is apparently about 900 light years past rocket science for the people who are paid to figure this stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Just from having common sense. Even people that can't read or write have much more sense than some of these. I know this one place I worked, our boss sent us to college, and somebody said to me, "Well, why are you going to college?" And I said, "To become an educated fool."
Well, you know, you remind me of something, Juanita, and that is, I mean, not you remind me, but what you've said reminds me of something. I said earlier that Pat Robertson should be taken to Haiti and made to dig. But there are all kinds of interesting philosophical ramifications of the hate of someone like Pat Robertson, one of which is the question, if Pat Robertson was starving, would he accept a meal from a person who practiced Vodun?
Yeah.
Would he, or would he starve?
No, Pat ain't gonna starve.
Pat ain't got no experience starving.
He takes mammon from anybody, you know.
Darn right.
But, you know, and the type of Christian he's supposed to be, he could have done cast Satan out of Haiti a long time ago if he was really... Or he could have tried instead of constantly saying for 30 years.
Well, you know, the thing that blew me away with watching that clip is he said, the Haitians made a deal with the devil, and the devil said.
Yeah.
Now, who was the transcriptionist for that, Juanita?
I have no idea.
The part where the devil says something.
Oh. Well, Joyce Behar said, well, maybe he's the devil. He talks to the devil. Maybe he's really the devil. Yeah, they come back on this week. And actually, Elizabeth Hasselhoff said that Pat Robertson was a Pharisee.
Got to wonder who's going to come out and defend Brother Pat on this one. Brett, don't you worry. Somebody will, Juanita.
Oh, sure
you mark
will.
My words.
Of course. Of course they will. But somebody said they thought it was his age, but... Well, he said that the first time I heard it was 30 years ago.
See, perspective is everything.
Huh?
Perspective is everything. Yeah, well, it's just like listening to Rush Limbaugh say, with talent on loan from God or with half my brain tied behind my back. There's air check tape out there from 1970 where you can hear him saying the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
just recycling the same shtick over and over and over.
When I was a member, too, there was another thing he had was the book. It was kind of like the Living Bible, and, you know.
Only it was called The Book, right?
Yeah. Okay, I was involved in that. And then, you know, I guess it was 20 years later, I'm working at this retirement home, and this is real sweet. Blind lady lived there, and he was starting it all over again, the book. And I just, you know, I don't try to run down what somebody believes, but.
Yeah, well, Tobias just told me via chat, Satan will issue a statement distancing himself from Pat. He doesn't want the bad PR.
But I tell you, I'd be scared if I was some of them people, if I really believe what they claim they believe, because the fear of God, you know, you don't mess with him.
But remember, you know, there are pithy and trenchant things said in the Horn chat room and on this program all the time. And I was reminded of something that our chat room moderator, Lottie, who is, you know, smarter than me by a factor of about a million.
Nobody's smarter than you, Bob.
Don't start. I'll trip over my shoelaces. You say something like that, Juanita. Don't curse me.
Oh, he fell for it.
Ba-dum-bum. But anyway, Lottie said, much of the Roman Catholic Church's expansion is not in the so-called developed world. Much of the Roman Catholic Church's expansion is in the undeveloped world, the world where, you know, where ignorance still reigns supreme.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that led Lottie to say the following, and that is, many practicing Roman Catholics practice their Roman Catholicism with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other.
Oh, yeah, I got you.
You know, the stories that are out there of what gets done to little children in Brazil and Haiti, and because that's a massively Catholic nation.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it's got to have some Baptist missionaries down there, because we got to save them from the voodoo and the Catholic.
Well, you know, all those things they had, the orphanages that the so-called Christian churches up here have had for years and years and years, you would have thought They would have wiped poverty out a long time ago. But I guess they couldn't. Because the devil had a hole, and he wouldn't let him go. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, Juanita, you have a wonderful evening. And, you know, every time, just, I don't know how you do it, but you might pull a compendium together of all the crazy stuff you heard Pat say over the years, and then we can just watch him recycle it and make people just be amazed on his websites when it crops up.
Well, Disney World, and he included all of Central Florida, but when they started having gay days.
Volcano?
You remember that?
Yeah, but what was it? It was volcano?
Yeah, we're going to have earthquakes.
Earthquakes, yeah.
Tsunamis. Vicious tornadoes, everything you can think about except a blizzard, I guess.
No frogs, no locusts, no rivers of blood?
No, he didn't mention that. But you know what? About a month later, they had a horrible hurricane, went up to Virginia. I think it hit Carolina first, but you just got to be careful.
I'm rubber, you're glue, it'll bounce off me and stick to you thing that Pharaoh had to learn. And, you know, I hesitate to mess with my own reality by wishing something awful would happen to Pat.
I know, Mel.
Let's put it this way, I won't be surprised if eventually it does. I mean, if a zombie comes and sucks his brains out on live TV, I won't be surprised a dime's worth.
Yeah. Hey, well, he knows the answer to everything. You know, those kind of people are dangerous.
Well, yeah, they are.
The answer to everything in the Bible. And, you know, but anyway, I'll shut up.
No, I understand. Juanita, have a wonderful evening.
You too. Night-night.
All right, bye now. What a wonder Juanita is. And you have to, you know, it's kind of like me calling myself a recovering Southern Baptist. You have to have had a certain cultural immersion in this stuff in order to see where it's coming from and where it's going. You know, we missed prayer meeting last night, so I don't feel real busted up about bringing a few of these to your attention. I'm looking at a story here from Americans United for Separation of Church and State about a character by the name of Joel McDermott. Joel McDermott has an essay called A Perfect Hatred. He's the director of research, and how you're a fundamentalist and yet you're a director of research, I don't know. The name of the organization he's director of research for is American Vision. They're out of Georgia, and they are one of those right-wing fundamentalist Christian Reconstructionist outfits that Malloy is so well-versed in. And their goal is to replace what passes for a constitutional democracy in this country with their own sick, twisted, ultra-fundamentalist, creepy-as-hell reading of the Old Testament. You know, the one where you stone disobedient children and so forth. And he's all mad because people are upset about the legislation under consideration in Uganda, where they would impose the death penalty on gay folk and people who suffer from HIV. And, you know, Rick Warren actually denounced the Ugandan stuff after a bunch of pressure, but that made Joel McDermott mad. Another angry Scott, Joel McDermott. And he wrote an essay, read this with the shower running, because you will be in the shower before you're done with reading the last word. But in this essay he says, "The truth is, hate is an inescapable concept in every society. The problem is that in modern society we have let the liberals and heathen..." Why didn't he just say the heathens? Because we already know he thinks we're heathens because we're liberals. "The liberals and heathen," see, there's more liberals than there are heathen. There's only one heathen, but there's lots of liberals, "define the values for us instead of gathering our standards of what is to be loved and what is to be hated from God's word. We are supposed to accept the shouts of shame from liberals, shouts which derive directly from their rejection of God's word and replacing of God's standards with their own value system." He doesn't even like most of the evangelicals. "The evangelical mantra has always been, hate the sin but love the sinner," a phrase which I know personally absolutely drove Peter Godbold to distraction.
which is good pastoral advice to a large degree, but even this piece of folk wisdom falls short of the biblical standard. God and his spokesman reveal a clear role for hate of both sin, Psalm 97:10, 101:3, 119:104, 113, 128, 163, 139, 21, 22, hut, 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 sorry, and the sinners themselves, Psalm 5:5, 11:5, 26:5, 31:6, Malachi 1, 1 through 3, Romans 9 through 13, cover 2, in some circumstances. On and on it goes. Hateful bastards. Just absolutely rotten, hateful. And it manifests itself, sadly enough, it manifests itself in the real world in which you and I live. Our buddy David in South Carolina wrote in a little bit ago to say, subject line from the email, hordes of looters. David says, I just made a quick scan of the Haiti situation and heard someone on CNN say, hordes of looters are out in the streets in Haiti. It sounded just like the reports from Katrina. That's because they report these things just like they reported Katrina. The only difference being, for the most part, Haiti being a primarily dark-skinned nation, they don't have any white people carrying stolen goods to juxtapose against it with a caption that says, these people are foraging for food. It's all looting in Haiti because there's not enough white people. And the lunacy goes all around the world. It goes all around the planet. Our good friend Robert in Kitakyushu, Japan, dropped this note. Thought you might want to add this in, as this ignorance knows no bounds and is in all countries. Headline, religious group raided over death of baby boy, from the Japan Times. Fukuoka in Kyoto Prefecture. Police raided the Fukuoka headquarters of a religious group Thursday over the death of a baby whose parents allegedly caused him to die by withholding medical treatment. The parents, Hideo and Kuniko Takatsuki, both of whom are followers and employees of the group Shinkenko Koyokai, were arrested Wednesday on suspicion of murder. Their 7-month-old son, Yoshihiko, underweight and suffering from eczema, died in October. Eczema! The parents allegedly only tried to help their son through religious acts of holding their hands over the baby's body in what the sect calls a jorai service to cleanse the soul. They told investigators they were confident the religious acts would clear up their son's disease, police sources said. Hideo Takatsuki, 32, became a follower in elementary school, while Kuniko Takatsuki, 30, joined when she was in junior high school. Several other followers of Shinkenko Kyokai conducted similar rituals with the baby. The group, headquartered in Higashi Ward, Fukuoka, has some 10,000 followers across Japan, according to the group's website and investigative sources. This religious insanity is the damnation that lies upon us all. There's about 11 minutes left in the program this evening. And I sort of want to bookend the program, if I may, by following up on something I promised earlier. And because there's an old English major in me that just can't not get out. Pointing out by comparison and contrast what happens on this program versus the professional radio that goes over the publicly owned airwaves. Renee Louise provided a beautiful, beautiful description of why the horn exists. Contrasted with that, I said that I had some audio from Rush Limbaugh that needed sharing. You know, Rush Limbaugh jumped out there yesterday, I believe it was, and said, my friends, I am outraged. It took Barack Obama 3 days to even say anything about the underwear bomber. But within hours, he was out there talking about this Haiti thing, and it will be a big appeal to both the light and the dark-skinned blacks. So, still flogging away, a woman named April from Kentucky called the oxymoron, the Junkies Show, and called him on the crappy comments that he had made. If you were with the program all along, you know what Rene Louise said. Now hear professional radio.
Back to the phones, we go to Paducah, Kentucky. This is April. That's one of my all-time top 10 favorite female names. April, thank you for calling. Nice to have you with us. Hello.
Thank you, Rush. I'm glad that you chose to have me on today.
Yes.
This is kind of belated, but I just have a question for
you. Yes, ma'am.
You.
Yes, ma'am.
Where in your right mind do you get the cojones to just completely, I don't know, I guess dismiss a tragedy of possibly 100,000 people dead in Haiti? You're going around discouraging people to send donations because we already donated to Haiti, and it's called the U.S. income tax. And Obama, the president of our United States, your president as well, whether you like it or not.
Where did you hear that I discourage donations to Haiti?
I read it in a news thing called the Huffington Post, but that's not the point. I was going to finish my sentence, if that's okay with you.
Well, but what you just said is a lie. What you they reported a lie. I did not discourage donations to
Haiti. Okay. Well, actually, the point I was getting to, whether or not you said that, which actually I believe
it's not whether or not that matters. I mean, you call here and you, where do I get off suggesting that we don't donate to Haiti because we do in the income tax? And I tell you, I said that, but I also said private donations are going to be much better than a government donation. They're all, go to the Red Cross, do other things. Don't go through the government. It's going to go through hands and bureaucracies, and a dollar's going to end up being 30 cents for the time they get through with it. I did not say don't make donations. That's not a whether or not thing. That's
calm
why you
down.
Called.
Calm finish, down.
Finish your sentence.
I planned on it, but actually, I like.
I kind of like April.
That, but what is this you were saying about our president of the United States trying to just basically establish credibility in the black community among white and dark-skinned African-Americans? And why do you, like, after saying that, why would you call yourself a patriot?
All right. Now, this is funny. I know that this was our media tweak of the day yesterday, April. You know, what I do here on this program is purposely, I play the media like a violin, like a Stradivarius, and I love tweaking them. I love irritating them, and I love upsetting them. And all I do is take words uttered by liberals and apply them to current events. It was Harry Reid who looked at Obama and said he's a light-skinned guy that doesn't speak.
I'm not talking about Harry Reid.
Well,
I'm talking about you.
I was. You see, this is the point. You didn't listen to the program. You're reading people who take what I say out of context precisely to create the sense of outrage that you have.
Okay.
In fact, I want you to listen to something with me. Before I said all of this, I made a prediction, because this was my media tweak of the day. I said this, and it's getting too easy. I mean, you're illustrating how easy it is to outrage these people. I enjoy it. This is a great success. When people start squealing like pigs is when I know I've hit a home run. This is what I said yesterday.
Before this week is out, I will be the one who uttered the words light-skinned and doesn't speak the Negro dialect when he does. I'll be the one that said it. Before the week is out, I'll be the one that said it, not Harry Reid. And I'll be asking, why have you not condemned Rush Limbaugh for what he said in repeating what Harry Reid said? And Harry Reid will condemn me from the Senate floor.
And then I proceeded to suggest that Obama is going to be giving aid to...
You know, he's not paying much attention to his old mentor or pal or bosom buddy, or maybe they took Dominican little boy vacations together. Who knows? Tom the Exterminator DeLay. Because, Carl the Turd Blossom Rove. It was Carl the Turd Blossom Rove who said, if you're explaining, you're losing. You're losing, Rush! You're an asshat!
Both light-skinned and dark-skinned Negroes in Haiti.
But by the way, we're not even there yet.
And just designed to get the reaction I got, and it worked.
Are you implying that the Huffington Post is the one and only resource that I watch?
No. I'm not implying it. What I'm.
Okay. Oh, here it comes.
What I'm illustrating here is that you're a blockhead. What I'm illustrating here is that you're a close-minded bigot who is ill-informed. I am being paid.
Oh, is he going to scream like a little girl, get off my telephone, get off my telephone? No, I'm sorry, that's Beck shtick. Oh, but wait. God, I can only take so much professional radio at one whack.
Patient and tolerant, and I'm trying to explain this to you, and you're totally close to it. I'm hitting you with piercing, penetrating logic, and it escapes you. And it is irritating people like you that I revel in. I absolutely revel in it. I've got 19 sound bites here today.
Come on, Rush. Chest pains. Chest pains.
April, of media people going bat manure yesterday over what they think I said. They didn't hear me say it either. They got it from the Huffington Post, or they got it from Media Matters, or they got it from someplace else. I did.
But, Rush, they got it, and you weren't taken out of context, Sunshine. They were merely playing audio like I am of you saying what you said. Whoopsie.
I did not say don't donate. I did say this Obama will use this to help burnish his credentials, because there's no question he will. He got out. I'll tell you something else I said.
Well, never mind.
April, took him 3 days to go out and talk about the Christmas Day underwear bomber. Took him less than 18 hours to get out there and start rallying people about...
Well, wait, Rush. Nobody died in the goddamned underwear bomber story. There may be 50,000 to 100,000 people dead in this one. How long did it take your dim leader to get to the smoking rubble of the World Trade Center? Stop it, Bob. Stop it.
Hurricane about this earthquake. And I love illustrating absurdity by being absurd. And if...
Okay, he's already engaged in name-calling here. Blockhead, right? That's not enough.
If you had listened to this program for a modicum of time, you would know it. But instead, you're a blockhead. Your mind is totally closed. You got tampons in your ears. Nothing's getting through other than the biased crap that you read.
Tampons in your ears.
Wow.
God, I love me some professional radio. I can't compete. I mean, no wonder he makes $40 million a year. Tampons in your ears, man. That is quick, derogatory, cutting, and on the fly. Jesus. A couple of minutes left. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That's you, boss.
Hey, pal.
What's up?
Well, I was trying to get the show on my new iPhone.
Oh, no.
Do you think that'll work?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it may.
Okay, I got it.
And I know two or three people that can probably make it happen if it can happen at all.
Okay. I did it, and it kind of looked like maybe it would happen, and some little sign came up and said, I don't know, something about can't connect, having trouble with connecting or something, or I don't know.
Well, if you're trying to bring it down on the ordinary wireless service that AT&T provides in the Beckley area, I'd bet against it because they haven't gone to 3G yet.
Okay.
You're just on what they call their edge network, which is
okay.
Next to useless.
Well, I'm going to see. So when do they plan on upgrading that? Or
I was told that Beckley was going to be upgraded by a month ago.
Okay.
Because it was supposed to almost extend to me, but so far, not so much.
All right. Well, that would be very interesting.
You know, you realize that technology and the world has changed when Wayne calls in and says, I'm trying to listen on my new iPhone.
Yes, it has. And Wayne don't know if he's happy with it yet either.
Wayne doesn't know if the iPhone's going to learn to fly or not.
No, I don't. But it's a pretty amazing little thing.
Oh, they are. They are delightful little boxes. And when you learn everything that they can do, man, is it fun.
Well, therein lies the problem, whether I have the capacity to learn it.
It might be more a matter, less a matter of capacity than it is a matter of patience, Wayne.
Now, that may be it, too. That may be it, too, Bob. So, but talking about patience, I want to tell you, do you realize what a good friend I am to you? I went into that. What's the name of that place?
Oh, that, yeah, that,
coat?
Yeah, that store?
Yes. I mean, you know, I've been known to break out in hives in malls. They're very harrowing experiences for me, you know, but.
Yeah, but this is for a good cause, because this is in order to prevent Bob from breaking out in frostbite in Washington, D.C.
Exactly, and that was what was driving me. I mean, you know, that's why I, you know, well, you know, endured it and everything like that. But, you know, I did in fact do it, and I got one with, you know, that had your name pinned to it. So
beautiful.
I would imagine.
I really appreciate
the right one. I would imagine that's the right one.
Yes, because I went to Frozen D.C. last January with Guy James and. In a flimsy little trench coat, and I want to tell you, it was cold.
Well, I would say this one will keep you warmer.
Well, this has been a year. This has been a year in the happening.
So when is this now?
Around the 26th.
Okay.
And hopefully, Guy and I will be on the air together. You know, we do such amazing work when we work together.
Yeah.
It's Families USA. And it's all about health care and you know, helping working families get the medical help that they need.
Okay. Sounds exciting. Next, when is the election in Massachusetts? Tuesday?
Yes, I think so.
Yes. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I can only hope that it doesn't... That it doesn't turn to disaster.
Oh, and as can I only hope. I don't know. It's scary when you read some of this stuff.
Yeah, it is. It is
rather frightening. And
well, you know, when the teabaggers only have one state to focus on. Ew.
Yes, exactly. We'll see, because I mean, my God, if we lost that one. We're in serious trouble.
Yeah.
Not just on health care, financial reform, you know, the whole nine yards, everything. Well, that's...
Well, I think there's a lot of things that have to, assuming it goes the right way, Wayne, it's still a pretty scary year, because there's a lot of stuff that has to happen before November. Because, yeah. I mean, if everything I'm reading and hearing here on the horn is any indicator, you know, Harry Reid is toast. That elusive 60 votes may just disappear like fog burning off.
Well, I'll tell you what. A lot of this is going to depend on jobs and what they're able to do with this jobs bill. And, I think if they could turn the tide in unemployment and get unemployment to drop a point, you know, a point and a half, people are going back to work, I think we'll be in pretty good shape. Because whatever is passed, you know, the Republicans are going to fight. If we get something passed, you know, it will be with absolutely no Republican help.
Right.
And, you know, I think that, you know, jobs has a lot to do with what's going to happen in November. And which, you know, to me, I really don't understand.
Right.
If you get rid of the Democrats and change the Republicans, that they're going to create jobs.
Well, you know, the Republicans like to say that, government has never created a job. I think you can make a more realistic appraisal when you assert that a Republican has never created a job.
That is much closer to the truth, I would say. So, I was listen a little. Well, earlier I called in. I was listening on the phone to young lady that was talking earlier?
Who, Renee Louise?
Renee Louise, yes. That was, that was very, very nice. That was very nice. She's, a very sincere woman. So, but anyway, boss, I just wondered, I was thinking, I was trying to get you on that phone, and I'm wondering how you do it.
Well, among other things, Ben Birch has been working on an app. You're going to learn all this vocabulary sooner or later. An application that will play the horn on an iPhone. I don't know where he is in that process.
Okay.
The other thing we have to do is find out if that thing's also Wi-Fi, because you've got a wireless router there. As long as you're sitting in your house, you should be able to get internet onto that. And then if you can play it, then yeah, you can sit there and play the program. Or, you know, like Charleston's got 3G service, so if you're down there and we get it to play on the iPhone, then it will, you can listen to the horn if you're in Charleston.
Well, I mean, you know, I got Google. I mean, I could go to Google on the thing. So.
Right, but the question is whether it'll play the streaming audio.
Right.
And, exactly. AT&T would like to make some money on that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
And whether you do. Yeah.
I don't doubt that.
But you know what? This little conversation we've had, Wayne, will probably generate more email in the next 24 hours than everything else we've talked about in the last three put together.
And why is that?
Because everybody's got iPhones, and everybody's in love with their iPhones, and everybody's going to say, no, well, all he's got to do is press this, click that, and stand, facing north with his tongue stuck out and his arm at a 37-degree angle to the sun, and he'll be able to get the show.
Okay, well, you know, I'll be seeing you, in the next day or two, so... I don't know, print the emails or something so we could figure out how to make that do that.
I will. I'll come over Super Bowl Sunday and we'll make it all happen.
That's too far away.
No, I was just referring to the fact that the last time we worked on a computer was Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, but, we'll have a lot more time on Super Bowl Sunday because the Steelers won't be there, you know.
Right, and your attention will not be otherwise diverted.
Exactly.
It'll probably be one fundamentalist quarterback against another fundamentalist quarterback, and who cares?
Exactly. Both of which I don't like.
Right. So. Exactly. All right, Wayne, have yourself a good night, and thanks for the help down there today. I appreciate it.
All right, brother. I'll be talking to you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's Boss Man Wayne wrapping up the show, and wrap up we do have to do. It's already 7 minutes past the hour, and I sincerely apologize to Mike Malloy for running over, and to Ben Birch too. These things happen. But at any rate, thanks everybody for a wonderful program and a lot of great discussion. Thank you. And thanks to everybody who helps keep the horn going via your contributions. I'm not going to say another word about that, knowing what's needed in Haiti. Anything more would be highly inappropriate, I think. But you keep the horn going by your ideas, not just your dollars, but by your ideas, your participation, it's you. It's all you. I just open the microphone and start speaking in tongues. Yeah, being a recovering Baptist makes that possible. But at any rate, thanks also always go out to Sue, to Lottie, to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, to our news ninjas Gene and Susan, to our blogger Texas Betsy, and our newly published blogger, Cassie, who has a blog post up at a very first professional blog post up over at Mother Jones. Go have a look. Go have a look. We're all so proud of her, we could just bust. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.